I call this meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox. I'm honored to preside at this annual town meeting tonight on the third night. I declare a quorum present. Please turn off cell phones, any devices that emit any noises. Please give your name and address for the record to assure a clear record each time you speak. If you desire to be recognized, just raise your card from your seat. All motions to amend must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and the Viewgraph staff in writing before they are made to the hall. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows in the rear to the left or right. Please remember our bylaw require presenters to speak for no more than 10 minutes, a total of 10 minutes, and speakers for no more than a total of 5 minutes. Unless you move in the words of the article, you must tell the hall of any word changes in the motion and how they differ from those words that voters saw in the warrant. I will remind you for the third time, there is no hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or the like before, during, or after the time someone is speaking. Nobody may make disrespectful comments, whether directed at another voter, a speaker, or a town official. Anybody who needs a warrant, please pick one up. There's some right here in front. If anyone needs them, please raise your hand and we'll have a Boy Scout deliver them to you. Anybody need a warrant? Oh, this is hardcore. This is grace. Bathrooms are across the hall from the floor of the auditorium. Fire exits are in the two back doors on either side of the seating, and also either staircase on to my right or left up front and exiting through the stage. Boy Scouts tonight are again Troop 63. Scoutmaster is Ken Chung, and the three Boy Scouts who are agreed to run for us is Liam Dumphy, Emmett Alcazab, and Colton Chung. Thank you very much, boys. Article 27 has been withdrawn before the warrant was printed. We move on to Article 28, which is a zoning amendment. Jody Kablack, Mr. Lozotti, new member of the Planning Board, on Article 28 will be making the motion.
Craig Leza, 161 Powers Road. Move to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? Yes, there is. Mr. Lozotti, for a quick presentation.
The Planning Board has voted to indefinitely postpone this article due to an omission in the article regarding the total size of an allowed shed, which has been deemed not to be within the four corners of an amendment. The intent of this article was to mirror language found in the State Building Code, which states that sheds not requiring a building permit can be a maximum of 200 square feet or no greater than 16 feet in length on any side. The original article omitted the size limitation. It is our intention to return with a revised article for the 2014 annual town meeting.
Thank you. Is it fair to say that the Planning Board voted to IP this and they're in favor of your motion?
That is correct.
Thank you. FinCom, Bob Jacobson.
FinCom takes no position.
No position. Selectman, Bob Hardy.
We support the IP.
IP. Anybody wish to be heard on whether or not this should be IP? Mr. Tyler.
So my understanding is the present size is what? How many square feet that you can allow in the bylaw? 100 square feet, I think, or something like that. So we're in a certain number of feet in size. So we're trying to increase the size of this shed, and in the proposal, it could have been maybe 500 feet because you could have had 10 sides. So they're trying to do something less than was permitted. So the question is, how is reducing the square foot from what could be a pentagon or an octagon or something like that, how is that not within the four corners? So maybe you'll be up. I say maybe you'll be up if it's within. I feel like an answer to the question because the decision the board made.
Hang on.
I just would like to reiterate that the planning board voted to IP this, and we would like to mirror the language in the state building code and come back next year.
Regardless of whether or not you're within the four corners of the article, is that correct?
That's what the planning board voted to do.
Thank you. What you're saying is superfluous. We're not going to pursue that. They want to IP it. If you're against IPing, you can speak to that.
Well, as I understand it, they voted, you know, I heard the reason they voted for it was that someone had advised them that...
Ralph, they said in addition to that, they do not wish to pursue this article tonight.
They have not convened as a board yet to decide that, but whatever. So I'm going to speak against it then. I suggest that
we're going to save you some time, Ralph.
Yeah.
Town council has an opinion on whether or not it's within the four corners.
Mr. Moderator, if it's not within the four corners, the language says 16 feet in the side. There could be 8 sides, 10 sides. Could be well over 200 feet.
That's exactly right. And therefore, reducing that as a number of square feet is clearly, right now, you're a smaller building. It could be 800 square feet, so if they put a requirement of 200 square feet in there, it's within the four corners.
They don't put a...
They could
Ralph,
amend.
Hang on.
They don't put any square footage in there. They put in 16 feet in length on any side.
Right, and the question that they said was they were advised they could not put in square footage because it would be outside the four corners. I questioned that. And so the question is, why can't you put in a square foot limit if you agree that it could be like 800 square feet? Then to limit it, you're 100 now. It might have been 800. So now we want to do something less. How is that not in the four corners?
Mr. Moderator, I can't address the question because there's nothing in the article or the motion indefinitely postponed that relates to what Mr. Rosenthal is saying.
Okay. Is it your opinion that what they want to do here in this motion is not within the four corners of the article?
Yes, it is, Ms. Wondering.
Okay, thank you.
So,
Mr. Tyler, you want to speak against the board that doesn't wish to bring up this article tonight?
I do.
Go right ahead.
Yeah.
You got 2 minutes left.
Did we just start?
2 minutes. 2 minutes.
When did the 5 minutes start?
About 3 minutes ago. And you're using up more of your time.
Yeah. Well, all I'd say is we've had some comments about the legal affairs bylaw, and I think that we know now why.
Ralph, you speak to the issue or you don't speak at all?
I'll go along with them if they're gutless.
I'm sorry? I didn't hear that. Yes, sir. Your point of order is in order. Mr. Tyler, please sit down.
I apologize.
Anybody else wish to speak on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? We have no, I don't see any opposition. It passes unanimously. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
It passes nearly unanimously. It's way more than the majority. We're now on Article 29. Yes, sir.
Craig Leza, 161 Powers Road, member of the Planning Board. Move to indefinitely postpone.
That receive a second? It does. Sir.
The Planning Board has voted to indefinitely postpone this article in order to study pending changes in the DEP regulations regarding wastewater treatment plants. Although our view is that the local bylaw is redundant and DEP regulations supersede it, we want to be fully informed of the changes proposed by DEP to ensure that deleting this bylaw does not jeopardize the town of Sudbury's surface or groundwater. We hope to return at a future town meeting with our recommendations.
Okay. Finance Committee have an opinion?
Finance Committee takes no position.
Yeah, just for the edification of the hall, the Finance Committee only must take positions on financial matters. Articles that do not involve finances, they don't have to take any position at all, and that's what they've chosen to do. Selectman, please.
We support the IP.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. All those in... I'm sorry. Apologize. Please stand, sir.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Is this one of those bylaws that if it's defeated can't be brought up again for some period of time that's longer than between now and the next annual town meeting? And if so, does indefinite postponement have the same effect as defeating the article?
One moment. Yes, that's a very good question, and the answer to the question is indefinite postponement does have the same effect as defeating it. Under Massachusetts law, when you defeat a zoning article at town meeting, yet the people have to wait 2 years to come back with the same article. There is one exception, unless the planning board otherwise approves of it. Okay? Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on the motion for indefinite postponement? I see no one. Please yell if I've missed you. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. I believe it was unanimous, well more than a majority. We're now on Article 30, temporary moratorium on medical marijuana treatment centers. And I understand we have a motion by Pat Brown from the Planning Board.
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road for the Planning Board. Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Pat? Okay.
In November of 2012, Massachusetts voters approved a ballot question legalizing marijuana for medical use. The Massachusetts Department of Public Health is devising the regulations governing the use and distribution of medical marijuana. These regulations are still in draft form. We are requesting a moratorium on issuing building and occupancy permits for medical marijuana treatment centers until June 30th of 2014. We can then review the language in the regulations when they're finally approved and draft zoning provisions to restrict medical marijuana treatment centers to appropriate locations in Sudbury. We will present these zoning provisions for approval at 2014 annual town meeting to be effective before the moratorium lifts on June 30th, 2014. Thank you.
Finance Committee have an opinion?
As this is not a financial article, the Finance Committee takes no position.
Selectman?
The Selectmen support the article.
Ms. Brown, is it fair to say to the hall that the Planning Board recommends this?
Yes, the Planning Board recommends the moratorium.
Yeah, I have to ask that because Massachusetts law requires it. Thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 30? Mr. Tyler.
No amendments just tonight. Just the next slide down there. Sudbury, there were 10,679 votes on the ballot question. We're maybe 200 here tonight. 6,000 of us said we wanted to have medical marijuana, and I'm not a user, and I'm not going to get a prescription with that, but I'm not certain what we're afraid of. I actually have a lot of confidence in the regulators. Massachusetts, they're pretty good. They're pretty tight. You know, CVS might be selling this stuff. I don't know. I just don't understand what we're afraid of. So if we could have the next slide. The percentage,
Mr. Tyler?
Percentage, 65%.
Are we going to continue to talk about what happened in that election? The reason is because that election was about whether or not we should have marijuana for medical use and have
right.
dispensaries. This article is whether or not we should have dispensaries in Sudbury. There's a difference. So I'd like you to stick to whether or not we should have dispensaries in Sudbury, and we have to vote on that now.
Yeah, I think so. So as you're thinking about this, I just would ask you, how many of the people who voted at this election do you think were voting that it's okay to, you know, put them in Roxbury or somewhere like that, but not that they might not be in our community or Framingham or somewhere nearby. So I just, you know, Myron's point is well taken, but I would say Sudbury voters have already spoken in large numbers. What are we afraid of? I mean, really.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Yes, please stand.
Martha Cove, 14 Churchill Street. On tonight's 6 o'clock news here in Boston, they said that these, I guess Norwell had something that where they had accepted it, but there's still some machinations in the State House about how to implement this on the local level. So we would be voting tonight before, you know, you either heard what the latest and decided word was on the 6 o'clock news tonight, or we are making a decision before the State House has finished the logistics of implementing this on the local level.
Ms. Brown, did you want to respond?
Two things on that. One is that the Health Council, I've gotten the name wrong, but the overarching Department of Public Health group that is doing regulations has actually finalized the draft regulations and made them available as of today. They're 52 pages, and no, I haven't read them. The second one is that there have been communities in Massachusetts, such as Wakefield, who have attempted to, through their town meeting, ban dispensaries entirely in their towns. And the Attorney General has shot that down. Okay, the voters said overwhelmingly they want medical marijuana available to people. And that's just not, you know, you can't say no. But what you can say is you can locate these within your community in a way that's, you know, responsive to your community. So you may not put them next door to your school, or you might decide that you don't, you know, that you have a desire to put them near public transportation. You have some reason to locate them. And I don't know what we in the planning board will find, but what we're saying is we do, I mean, even if what we wanted to do was exclude them, the Attorney General has said you can't do that. So what we'd like to do is to zone appropriately, and we'd like enough time to look at the regulations to figure out what is a dispensary and what would be appropriate zoning before we bring that to town meeting and ask you to vote on it. Thank you.
Anybody else like to be heard on Article 30? Please stand up right there.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. I just have a question. If the state hasn't promulgated regulations yet, could somebody even apply for one before that's done?
Ms. Brown?
Thank you. Okay. The regulations that just came out today, I don't remember the name of the stage that they need to go through, but they become operative on May 24th. And at that time, people can start moving forward and trying to put together a dispensary. It's the impression of the Department of Public Health that even with people moving full steam ahead, it's going to be the end of the year before we see the first dispensary. But we are going to have an idea of, you know, what does it take to do a dispensary? And so if somebody comes to Sudbury and says, I want to open a dispensary here, then it's incumbent on us to try and have that, you know, any restrictions or zoning that we want to have in place, we need to have that ready for them. All we're asking is that they don't go for permits before we have a chance to do it. We do not get forever. We get till June 30th. And part of that use of setting that time frame is so that we can come to town meeting in May of next year with an article, and that, you know, it will have gone through all of the vetting that zoning articles go through. And so town meeting can vote on it in an informed way, and then we will have that, you know, good to go. That's what the moratorium is it says essentially you can't get your permits right now because we don't have the zoning for you to get the permits under. We want to do that.
Okay. Was there another hand? Please stand up. You have a mic?
Yeah, hi. Josh Lieberman, Hopesdale Brown Road. Just a question. I know little to nothing about this. Is there a revenue generating opportunity for Sudbury, permitting, taxes, licensing, that can fund some of the other things we've been voting on?
It's possible. I don't know.
Anyone else wish to be heard under this article? I see no one. This requires a two-thirds vote because it's a zoning amendment. Hang on 1 minute. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by way more than two-thirds. We're going to move on to Article 31, Community Preservation Fund. Our custom is to allow the CPC to make preliminary comments about its eight articles and then have, in some cases, the affected board or committee give the presentation on the individual article. So the Chris Morley is the chairman of the CPC, and may I ask you now, to save me from asking it eight more times, is the CPC making a favorable recommendation on each of its eight main motions that it is making or the affected board or committee is making?
It is.
Thank you. You want to give us the quick overview, and then we'll turn to Article 32.
Okay. Usually you have me do the article and then...
Go right ahead.
It's up to you.
Yes. Go ahead and make the motion,
okay,
please.
Move in the words of the article, except change the reference to Article 38 to Article 36 of the 2006 annual town meeting.
Does it receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley. So you are not going to make the presentation.
No.
You're just going to give us the overview.
Exactly.
And we'll have someone else make the presentation.
As he just said, good evening to everyone. Chris Morley, elected member of the Planning Board and that board's representative to the Community Preservation Committee. What I'm going to attempt to do in the time allowed tonight is give an overview of where the CPA and Sudbury program has focused its efforts to date and highlight some goals that still lie on the horizon. My hope in the process is that those who are like new to the subject, which maybe nobody here tonight, but you never know, will generally understand it, and those who already are familiar will have a sense of what the future may bring us. While I'm talking, there may be slides which are informative, but that I may not specifically address, so that we can all multitask together. In the 1990s, a very large number of Sudbury residents mobilized to find some way of preventing the development of subdivisions on all of the remaining buildable land in town. The town even voted to tax itself for that purpose. The state disallowed our land bank, but in response created the statewide Community Preservation Act statute, or CPA, which Sudbury adopted. To date, 154 other towns in the state have adopted it as well. Sudbury has adapted the CPA to its own purposes, a flexibility designed into the act. The main thrust of the CPA and Sudbury program remains that which mobilized the town in the first place, the preservation of open space land. To accomplish this, more than half of all property owners pay a CPA tax that ranges from nothing, due to exemptions, up to about $250 a year. Another 25% or so pay up to $350 a year. A very small percentage of property owners pay more than $500. So in the end, we are taxing ourselves as originally planned, but we have also received $8.6 million in supportive funding from the state. Furthermore, in this process, Sudbury has received state grants for land purchases totaling $900,000. We well know here that the grant makers on Beacon Hill do not always smile upon wealthy towns like Sudbury, but they do like to lend support to towns that are clearly making a strong effort on their own, like Sudbury. $9.5 million coming into Sudbury, vastly increasing our ability to accomplish that which we had set out to do on our own in the first place. And we are not done. We will have a map, and this perhaps hard to read map. I can't tell it when it's really large. No, it's still kind of hard to read. targeted parcels that were identified in the 2009 Open Space and Recreation Plan. Sorry, lost my place, but it's that report is the kind of the thing that the local volunteer effort that Sudbury gets bonus points for when we go to the town and ask for getting grants. Go to the state and ask for grants. Note that the parcels are all over town. Larger ones that could host new streets and dozens of new houses, and others, though smaller, where development would have a strong adverse impact upon an existing neighborhood, the environment, or both. Of course, acquiring open space is not the only thing accomplished through the CPA. I promised in my opening a few highlights of what's on the horizon for the CPA program in Sudbury. I have time, I think, to address just a couple of them. In the historic preservation category, more projects have been accomplished than in any other category, but most were of a smaller dollar value. Consequently, we have to date spent less than the 10% minimum requirement of the CPA statute. Down the road, with a long and complicated planning and approval process still before it, is a town project that would be supported by a large amount of historic preservation CPA funds. The project would involve the adaptive reuse of the historic town hall and Loring Parsonage buildings, and concepts are under study right now. Ideally, these two buildings would be connected together by a creative new structure that would allow the town to fully use these severely underutilized building assets, to relocate the school department offices from their temporary home of many years to the town center office complex, to free up the Fairbank Community Center for better use by the senior center, the teen center, and park and recreation related activities, and to further enhance the town center improvement effort that's just now getting underway. The entire cost of the town hall project would not be CPA eligible by any means, but Sudbury would be joining many towns in recent years that have used their historic preservation CPA funds to pay for the historic rehabilitation portion of their town hall office modernization efforts. Speaking of park and recreation, the CPA and Sudbury program has invested in large amounts of money to date in the purchase of the land and the construction of Cutting Field on Maynard Road, the creative but legal contribution of one half of the funds that were used to create the community field complex here at LS, and other projects and planning efforts. This year, there has been a major change in the CPA statute affecting the recreation category. For the first time, it allows the rebuilding of existing parks and athletic fields, previously held to be non-allowed maintenance expenses. It is anticipated that as Park and Rec completes their planning process, there will be multiple opportunities to use CPA funds. New athletic fields, rebuilt parks like Grinnell Park and Town Center, and a possible rail trail will add up to an ambitious but rewarding Park and Rec effort over many years. 15 seconds.
Okay.
30, maybe. Such an effort will not only involve CPA funding, but additional funding and support from private groups as well as from the town as a whole. As I said, these are just a couple of highlights of a possible future. As they do for all of us, things change, especially in real estate, for example. A landowner who stated planning horizon for selling their property was 10 years may one day walk into the office with a very different time frame in mind. The Community Preservation Committee tries very hard to be prepared for change, which is consistent with its charge of preservation for posterity. And although we are at this time approaching our debt limit with the recent purchase of Pantry Brook Farm, we expect the policies of the CPC to enable the CPA and Sudbury program to accomplish much more as we go forward. Thank you all for your support. And now on to Article 31.
Frank Lyons, can you come forward, please? Frank, I think he just stole 30 seconds of your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. What I'm going to be talking about tonight, briefly, is a modification of a article that was passed in 2006. And we're talking about, preservation of wildlife habitat. We started out harvesting Carding Mill Pond some time ago, and it's had a really significant effect on the wildlife habitat in Carding Mill Pond. Last year, as part of our harvesting effort, we were able to get permission to harvest Stearns Mill Pond for the first time. It was pretty dramatic what we were able to do while we were there, but clearly more is needed. Next slide, please. Okay. This shows you what a pond looks like when it's hypereutrophic. Now, hypereutrophic sounds like a pretty fancy word, and basically what it means is that the pond is more able to support plant life than animal life. When you look at this picture of Carding Mill Pond before we started harvesting, you see no open water. And one of the effects of having no open water is you get fish kill. There's a diurnal or daily oxygen cycle, and during the day the plants put oxygen into the water. At night they take oxygen out of the water, and the dissolved oxygen is at its lowest at dawn. When this situation presented itself in Carding Mill Pond, if you walked around the pond, you'd see dead fish. Next slide, please. This is what Carding Mill Pond looks like now, after we had harvested it for a number of years. Clearly there was wildlife habitat restoration. There are fish in there that are happy with their oxygen levels. There are blue herons that are back. You see swans, you see ducks, and so on. Next slide, please. This is a picture of Stearns Mill Pond. And you can see in the front of the picture, there's a little open water. That was the result of a pretty significant hand-pulling effort that was done in early June. And the idea there is that you try to pull the weeds that are near the banks by hand, put them in a canoe, and then take them away. Understanding that the harvester can't really get close to shore in a lot of cases. Next slide, please. Hadn't shown up here. Anyway, that's the harvester. That harvester is owned by United States Fish and Wildlife. They're over on Weir Hill Road. We borrow that harvester from them. We do one of the costs that we have. We pay for an operator, and one of the additional costs that we have are maintenance costs for the harvester, which can be significant in some years. Next slide, please. So, two ways to do it. You can hire a firm to do it. Aquatic Control Technologies is one of the firms that does it. I can tell you that it costs many, many times the amount of money that we have spent so far. I mean, we've spent probably less than $40,000 or $50,000, maybe even less than that, probably less than $30,000, to harvest Carding Mill Pond, which is actually bigger than Herd Pond, and we did one round of harvesting at Stearns Mill Pond. Obviously, our position is that the best thing to do is roll up your sleeves and manage it yourself. So, there's a picture. The interesting thing about that picture to me is that happens to be me, and we're harvesting Hydrodictyon in Grist Mill Pond. But there's a difference in my hair color, which kind of tells you how long I've been doing this. So that's the end of the presentation.
Thank you. So do I understand, Mr. Morley, that the motion is to take $7,400 from a 2006 annual town meeting and put it towards this? Okay. Are there any questions or comments, anyone? Let's start off with the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee approves this project.
And the Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen approved the project and thanked the Hopbrook Protection Association for their protection of the natural environment. Thank you, Frank.
Great. Now let's open it up to anyone else. Was there someone way back here? Could you stand up, sir? Can we get a mic to this gentleman?
Good Brian Temple, 15 Revere. Mr. Moderator, Mr. Morley made a presentation on the CPA in general. We get a chance to ask him questions?
Yeah, will it have to do with his budget? Because we're going to have a budget article, and there'll be lots of time to ask questions on that.
What, Article 38?
It's 38.
Okay, I'll do it. Thank you.
Great. Anybody else have any questions on this article? Yes. Yeah, okay, I'll tell you what he said in a minute. Mr. Tyler is pointing out that there's no money mentioned in the warrant, there's no money mentioned in the article, but there is in the explanation. If you look in your warrant under the CPC report, that's how I found out that the number was $7,400 or for exactly 740406.16 cents from the 2006. The article says to use the unspent money from that article in 236, the motion, in 2006. And the explanation, which is in the report but not in the motion, tells you the amount of that unspent money. So that's just by way of explanation. Anybody else wish to be heard on this motion? I see no one else. All those in favor signify by, is a majority vote. Signify raising your cards. Those opposed, it's way, way more than a majority. So we're going to move on to Article 32.
Mr. Moderator, may I make just one comment?
As long
before leaving, I would like to thank Bill Place in particular. He's been extremely helpful in helping us with the work we've accomplished, and I'd also like to thank Debbie Deneen, who's also been very supportive.
Okay. Speaking of whom, Mr. Place.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Do I make the motion?
You have to make the motion.
Motion to move in the words of the article.
With the sum of $100,000 appropriated?
That's correct.
Is there a second? It is. And you're making the presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
You're going to have to get closer to the mic, Bill.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr.
You're
Moderator.
You're too tall.
My name is William Place. I'm the Director of Public Works. The popularity of the walkway construction program has been growing over the last few years. The Planning Board received 3 petitions for walkways in 2011. The town routinely receives calls from residents about how to get the street on the list. It's clear that living in a neighborhood with a walkway is a quality of life issue for many residents. We are proud to have recent completed projects on Willis Road, Raymond Road, Knobscot Road, North Road, and have 2 projects currently under construction on Old Framingham Road and Peckham Road, south of Robertfest. It is rare to drive down these streets on a clear day and not witness people walking, jogging, biking, and recreating in their own front yards. However, we are not done. The 2000 Walkway Master Plan identified at least 13 additional miles of roads needing walkways. We currently have petitions from residents on Dudley Road, Pantry Road, Dutton Road, Ottomill Road, Marlborough Road, and Powers Road. Residents who wish to have their streets considered can submit a petition to the Director of Public Works, to the Planning and Community Development Department. Petitions are accepted at any time. The Planning Board assists us in prioritizing walkways for construction based on community need, the ability to construct specific sections, and funding. None of the money from this article will be spent maintaining existing walkways. Walkway maintenance is funded in an item in the DPW operating budget. All funds approved under the House article will construct new walkways segments as allowed by the Community Preservation Act under the category of creation of recreational areas. I urge your support. Thank you.
Bill Nealon, Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee supports this article.
John Drabinski, Selectman.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen unanimously support the article.
Marianne Villado, ex officio on the CIPC Committee.
The Capital Committee voted to support this article.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 32? Yes. Ralph, no one can hear you. Why don't you come to the mic?
I love these walkways. I have 2 questions. at $100,000 a year, how many years before the priority walkways on the main thoroughfares will be constructed, and what's approximate total budget to do those things? Because I worry. I see the high school kids running down Concord Road at rush hour, cross-country runners and whatnot, and I know that one of these days we're going to have somebody killed out there because we don't have walkways, and I think we should do a lot more, a lot quicker.
Mr. Place, do you happen to know how much money we need to finish off the major roads for walkways?
It's difficult to predict, Mr. Moderator. Each walkway is unique in itself. There are issues associated with whether or not abutters will give easements, physical constraints as far as grading, wetland issues. To put a number on it is very difficult. We can probably construct approximately 2,000 feet a year. As the number of miles that we have, it's going to take some time to complete the number of walkways that are on our list currently.
We're talking about several years. Anyone else wish to be heard on the Article 32? Could you stand up, please, and can we get a mic to this gentleman? After you've been recognized, if you'd be kind enough to stand for the benefit of the Boy Scouts to be able to get a mic to you.
Greg Hamill, 16 Pine Street. Got a couple questions. We've seen the map. Can you give us a description of the current prioritization of the sidewalks?
Right now, we're under construction is the Peckham Road walkway and Old Framingham Road walkway. We're negotiating now with the abutters on Dudley Road. We've been out there several times deciding which side of the road to be put it on. As you know, Dudley Road is very narrow. The edge of the pavement is basically the edge of the layout of the road, so we're going to need easements just about from every abutter out on Dudley Road.
Okay, and do the prioritizations change year to year?
All depends on
some, will some new project take over the priority of some other project from years ago?
We try to find the prioritization, but again, it depends on the funding. Dutton Road has been waiting for a walkway for some time. People on Pantry Road have been waiting for a walkway for some time. Marlborough Road has been waiting for a long time. Again, it depends on the funding. If CPA comes up with the funding, then we'll move ahead. Again, it comes down to wetland issues, abutters issues, a lot of issues going to affect as far as the prioritization.
Okay, I commend the CPA for helping us, but is this $100,000 a stopgap for the funds that have now, we don't have any more funds left over, or the project has cost more? Each of the individual projects that's been on hold for a year or two or 5 years is now $50,000 more to do?
We've been looking for $100,000 a year. 1 year we asked for $200,000, and that was spent within 1 year. We have approximately $75,000 left over from last year's CPA article that was going to be used towards Dudley Road. Again, this $100,000 will be put towards Dudley Road and any future walkway.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 32? I see no one. All those in favor signify as a majority vote. Raising your cards. Those opposed. It passes nearly unanimously, well more than a majority. We're now going to move on to Article 33 and Revolutionary War Cemetery. And we have someone making that presentation. Jim Hill.
Jim Hill, 199 Concord Road. Vice Chair of the Historic Commission. I move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Hill?
This article is to amend Article 27 of the 2004 town meeting. The original scope of Article 27 was just for the restoration of gravestones at the town's Revolutionary War Cemetery. To date, 65,000 of the appropriated 172,350 has been spent. We've pretty much completed most of the restoration of those gravestones at this time. This amendment would expand the scope of the project to include continued restoration at the Revolutionary War Cemetery and include restoration projects in all town-managed cemeteries under the direction of the Historical Commission. Are there any questions?
I'll take care of that part. Finance Committee have a position?
The Finance Committee supports this article.
Mr. Drabinski for the Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen unanimously support the article.
Now, as Mr. Hill said, does anyone have any questions or wish to be heard on the article? I see someone right over there. Could you stand up, please?
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. I think there's a typo. In the words of the article, it says that the funds appropriated to be expanded for survey and restoration. I realize you have expand on the brain, but it's expended, I think, for survey and restoration. Is it not?
I don't understand your question.
CPC, should that
read
be any expended? CPC?
Yes. Not hard. Line 2 of the article, as it is in the warrant.
Should expanded be expended? Change the A to an E with your permission.
Sure.
You think it's good? We have mixed feelings. Which way would you like to go? A or E?
Expanded at all.
Either one will do it.
It says at because it says at all.
It was okay.
We have, thank you for pointing it out, but we're going to stay with expanded because the article was limited back in 2004 and they want to expand the article. Funds cannot be expanded. Okay.
The use of funds.
Hang on. Would you like to leave the motion as it stands in the words of the article? Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes, sir. Can we get a mic down to this gentleman up here, down here? Could you stand up? Thank you.
I don't wish to. Can you hear me?
I just need
I don't wish to be unsupportive of this. Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I see a great disparity between the two numbers up there, and I just wanted to ask, when this was initially funded for 172 plus, essentially was that an overestimation of what was needed to do the job at that time? It's almost a factor of 3.
Okay. To answer your question, no. The answer is actually no. But what happened is we went out and we got bids to do the project that we were looking to accomplish. Those bids came in at $172,350. So that's what we came to town meeting and appropriated. When we went out to actually do the bidding, we found other suppliers who could come in and would do it at a much lower price. On top of that, we didn't hire an outside agency to oversee the project. The members of the Historical Commission themselves personally oversaw the project, and that saved quite a bit of money. So that's why, even though we're pretty much at the end of that project or that phase of the project, we have this extra money left over, and it's because of, you know, frankly, we're taxpayers too, so we look to save every dollar we can. And now we're just looking, instead of asking for additional money, to take this money and continue the projects within the town.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 33? Hang on. Yes, right over here.
Dandy Pompey, Haynes Road. I support this, but I just have a question. If we don't vote to approve this, then does that money just sit there forever like it's happening on some other projects?
No. Actually, all CPA money or CPA money, when the project is completed, that money reverts back to the CPA. In this case, the money would revert back to the historical portion or savings, if you will, of the CPA money.
Okay, so when a project is deemed to be completed or you can't do any more, the money goes back to the CPA.
Correct.
Thank you. I'll save for a later question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The problem I have with this is that it seems that there's an aversion to a job coming in under budget. The fact of the matter is that the only justification that we have heard for this expanded effort to clean up gravestones in all of the cemeteries is that we didn't spend the money that we were afraid we were going to have to spend to do the job that we thought needed to be done in the first place. And I don't think that's a sufficient rationalization for spending the money. If there were some reason why we need to do this, then why wasn't this noticed before? It sounds to me as though this is just a case of, well, the money's there. We might as well spend it on just an extension of what we were doing. And I don't think that's the right thing to do. Before you give up that mic, you want to tell us your name and address for the record?
Bob Coe, 14 Churchill Street.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Could you stand up? And can we get a mic over there?
Liz Rodowski, 358 Old Lancaster Road. I am the member of the commission who has been standing out in the sun working on all these graves with the contractors. The reason that we have money is because we've spent a lot of effort, a lot of time, and a lot of volunteer work. Now, there is still lots of stones that are falling over. We can take the money, as Mr. Coe has suggested, and return it back into the historical, and I will come back next year and ask you again, item by item, to get these stones picked up. We have two stones that are over in the Old Town Cemetery that right now are laying flat on their back. They're not going to get any better. They're not going to get any work. We have it. It's a matter of bookkeeping, in my book, of where do you want to put the money. If what is left is certainly going to be turned over and returned back to the historical funding in the context. That answers his question.
Anybody else have any questions? Yes, ma'am.
Mr.
Could
Moderator,
you stand up?
May I make a comment?
Go ahead.
To address Mr. Coe, one of the when you work on projects like this, the projects are in phases. So, in fact, basically what we're looking to do is not just, oh, gee, we have extra money left over, let's find a way to spend it. It's more a matter of moving on to the next phase without returning the money and then going back and getting additional money. It's a continuation of the project, but each project has a phase and then goes into the next phase. For example, at the Revolutionary War Cemetery right now, though the most of the gravestones have been fixed, we also did ground-penetrating radar last year, which uncovered about another 400 graves that are underground. So this money will also be used within the Revolutionary War Cemetery to do that next phase, which is identifying and pulling up the gravestones that are underground. So it's a continuation of the project, not just a way to spend additional money. Thank you.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. I think Mr. Hill just answered half of my question, which was I think it would be helpful to the hall to know what you meant by continued restoration of the Revolutionary War Cemetery, and also what you mean by restoration projects in all town-managed cemeteries. I'm assuming you're looking at the older grave sites and that you have some parameters for the work because it's under the aegis of the Historic Commission.
Mr. Hill, can we just get your name one more time for the record?
Rebecca Cutting, Cutting.
Thank you. Mr. Hill?
Yes. Within the other cemeteries, to explain it, there are gravestones within the town of Sudbury that are not covered under the perpetual care fund. Currently, when you buy a grave plot, a portion of that money is put into a fund which provides perpetual care done through the DPW. There are many stones within our town's graveyards that aren't covered under that, and therefore it's kind of a burden for the DPW to manage those, and they don't necessarily have the funds to do that. So the gravestones in particular that are at risk are those that are not part of the perpetual care fund, and those are the ones that would be the main reason that we would want to do this. Additional reasons would be stone wall work within the cemeteries, you know, that type of maintenance, which isn't day-to-day maintenance that we would be looking to solve with this funds.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be? Hang on one second. Let me just get people who haven't spoken yet. Yes, that woman right there.
McClain, chairman of the Sudbury Historical Commission. If you go through all the cemeteries in Sudbury, North Cemetery has railings down. Wadsworth Cemetery has two slate stones down. There are several up in Old Town and Mount Pleasant that need repair, and I think when people come to this town to do a historic tour and see the condition of some of these stones, they're crying for help.
Anyone else who wishes to be heard who hasn't spoken yet? Can you stand up, please? Can we get a mic to this gentleman way up there?
Richard Paulson, 235 Willis Road, Sudbury, Massachusetts. This is our history. This is what America was founded on. This minuscule amount of money they're asking for is nothing. We should all vote for this. This is what this country was founded on. These people fought to make America what it is today. This is minor. This is minuscule money. We should take care of this. This is what this country was founded on. These people fought to make America great, and we should vote on this and pass it and preserve this history of this town and this state and this union. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? The question has been moved before I took anyone else. Does that receive a second? Who wishes to speak and add new information here? One person. So keep that in mind when you're voting, please. All those in favor of the call of question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. Yeah, it does receive a two-thirds. So we're going to move on to the main motion, the only motion before us. On the screen, can we get that back up? That's it? Mark, is that the motion? The motion is move in the words of the article. It's in your warrant, so you can look there if you like. All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. This is a majority vote. All those opposed, it passes well more than a majority. We're going to move on to Article 34, and we have Michael Bonacani, Sudbury Housing Trust, to make a presentation, a motion. That motion.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Monner. I'd like to move in the words of the article.
A few more. It's right behind you.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $202,500 appropriated for the fiscal year 2014 revenue and the sum of $140,296 funded from the restricted reserves for housing.
That receive a second. It does. Mr. Bonacani for presentation.
Thank you, sir. The Sudbury Housing Trust was formed by town meeting accepting the Mass General Law, Chapter 44, Section 55C, at the April 2006 annual town meeting. Prior to the trust creation, the appropriated CPA housing funds were not spent. For CPA purposes, 10% of the revenue must be set aside for housing. The trust agreement was developed with the town's interest in mind. The trust agreement allows a range of powers and requires selectman approval for certain transactions like buying, selling, and mortgaging and placing mortgage on land. The town treasurer is a custodian of the funds, and the trust operates under all municipal, public procurement, and open meeting law. The creation of the trust allowed for an entity primarily focused on home ownership opportunities. In the last 6 years since the trust was created, the trust has directly created 7 units of housing and assisted in another 70. Helping seniors maintain their homes is also important to the trust, and you'll hear more about that later on. The trust has been funded by town meeting for 5 years. The purpose of the trust shall be to provide for the preservation and creation of affordable housing in the town of Sudbury for the benefit of low and moderate income households. The trust believes it has taken a number of positive steps towards these goals and plans to build on those successes. The Sudbury Housing Trust overview. The trust has 3 main goals, all of which align with the town's affordable housing plan. Goal 1, preserve and create affordable home ownership. Through the home preservation program, the trust has created and preserved 7 units of permanently deeded restricted housing in 6 years. Goal 2, help seniors maintain their homes. The small grants program, so we use $65,000 for 26 senior households for health and safety repairs and helping seniors stay in their homes. Goal 3, fund priority projects. Providing gap funding to the Coolidge at Sudbury project, which was $250,000, and Sudbury Housing Authority, which was $150,000. This gap funding allowed these community-endorsed projects to go forward and close a relatively small funding gap. We used the word gap to convey that the trust assistance was brought in at the end when the project had raised funds through all other avenues. So for the Coolidge at Sudbury, there are essentially 64 rental units for seniors that are 55 and over. The Coolidge is an important project for Sudbury since it created enough affordable housing units to certify the housing production plan while providing affordable rental housing for seniors. We also provided funds to the Sudbury Housing Authority for 6 new rental units. There are approximately 5,900 units of housing in Sudbury. The Sudbury Housing Trust has created 7 units over 5 years, which is a small number, but still provides some local options. All units created by the trust or any project that the trust contributes to has a perpetual deed restriction to preserve the affordable forever. There are two of the homes behind me that are created by the trust. The Habitat Project, which we've talked about before, was very well received and has set a model for Habitat for Humanity. Our home preservation. So here are another 5 units created by the trust. This is the home preservation program. You saw the recent article in the Town Crier, perhaps written by one of the trustees, Peter Crow. In this program, smaller, less expensive homes are purchased and sold, subject to a permanent deed restriction to eligible first-time homeowners selected from a lottery. In this way, pre-existing homes are converted to affordable housing, preserving existing housing stock. The home preservation program also prevents tear-down homes. The homes are scattered around Sudbury and offered via lottery, generally held every fall. Our small grants program. The trust continues to sponsor the small grants program to help seniors and other moderate income homeowners fund health and safety repairs in their homes. The program has 3 rolling grant periods annually and has awarded $66,500 for 26 grants over the life of the program. And 77% of the grantees are senior households. In fiscal year 2012, the trust awarded 4 grants for a total of $7,000. It's easy to, the easy to submit the application can be found on the trust website. The small grants program requires requirements include an income test, so it must be less than 100% of the area median income, as determined by HUD. So for a household of 2, that's $76,600. And for a household of four, that's $94,400. The second requirement is that the home assessment is less than the town median of all single-family homes, which is $561,550. And the applicant must be the owner and living in that home as their primary residence. Grants are awarded based on need, can be up to $3,000. As you can see, most are awarded to seniors, as I've said previously. Sample repairs include ramps, furnaces, handrails, helping with leaks and rotted wood. So our next grant cycle is coming up in June. Priority projects. So local funding is required for projects with other state and public subsidies. For example, the Coolidge at Sudbury project required gap funding, as I've said previously. The Sudbury Housing Authority has also required the same. So the Coolidge created 64 units and provided a 40B safe harbor for Sudbury. Sudbury is now in a safe harbor until July 31st, 2014. The Maynard Road project. So many people are aware of the trust project in Maynard Road. The trust purchased the 1 acre property in 2008 for $330,000. This includes a demolition and the purchase of the property. The trust then hired NOAA to complete the permitting process. NOAA completed the design, engineering, and obtained a comprehensive permit for a 3-unit development. As you may recall, the project was reduced in size from 6 units to 3. After discussions with the neighbors. Construction drawings were prepared, sent out to bid. We received 3 responses from 3 developers. The trust received strong feedback that the project was over-designed, unfortunately, generating bids that were much higher than the trust felt was appropriate. NOAA chose to terminate versus scaling back our design. The initial agreement with NOAA always contemplated that either party could terminate at the point in the project. In the event the budget wasn't feasible. So while unfortunate, it was not completely unexpected. So while the trust paid NOAA for the work performed, in this case it was $230,000, and terminated our relationship with them in March of last year. This termination wasn't an out-of-court settlement because there was no lawsuit involved. The trust is a qualified, capable, and careful group, and we're certainly focused on all the money we spend so we can use it towards affordable housing. Just recently, the trust hired Davis Square Architects to help move the project here in Maynard Road forward through RFS, which is a request for services. There were 2 items in particular that we really wanted to address. The first one is the design, which essentially we wanted to find out what we could do to make it simpler and reduce costs. So this Davis Square Architect came back and eliminated basements, made the roof lines more simple, and essentially reduced the construction cost for us. The trust had a meeting with the Maynard Road Neighborhood Group in April to understand the concerns with the design, and we received positive feedback. This is where we are now with the Maynard Road project. The property is valued at $558,000, which includes the land, the engineering, the design, and comprehensive permit. The next step is to get construction estimates. The best way we can get this is to ask builders. So to that end, the trust is considering putting the project out to bid with the drawings and materials it currently has. Once construction costs are received and a realistic development budget is developed, the trust will essentially vote and agree to proceed if that's the best way to go. Lastly, we would go to the ZBA and request that essentially request that they amend our comprehensive permit so that we can move forward. Next is our financial statement. So please note that the full audited financial statement is on the Sudbury Housing Trust website. So if anyone wants to look at that, please feel free to do so. Our assets. So as I've already said before, the land asset, we've gone through that. So the accounting value of it is $558,360.
Mr. Bonacani, how much longer do you have?
2 minutes, sir.
Okay, can I just ask a question? Are these things we're talking about now related to this Article 34? In other words...
No, not exactly.
Well, I need you to relate to the money you're asking for,
okay.
what it's going to be used for.
So if we go to slide 10. 10% of the CPA funds must be spent.
Hang on one second. So we need how much longer now? 1 minute. Two minutes?
Two minutes, please.
2 minutes. Does the hall wish to give this gentleman permission for 2 minutes? Signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? Okay. And let's stick, it passes. Mr. Bonica, let's stick to this article.
Okay. 10% of the CPA funds must be spent on housing, and it's been the tradition in Sudbury to appropriate those to the housing trust. Each year, 10% of the CPA funds must be allocated to housing. The $140,000 represents a true-up so that the actual 10% matches. The Sudbury Housing Trust provides an avenue for first-time home buyers, small number of units overall, but it's an important contribution. And essentially, the folks who do live in these homes are their teachers, the social worker, a town firefighter, a retired couple. So lastly, in summary, you may be aware that Sudbury has a housing production plan that has been adopted by the selectmen, approved and certified by the state. This plan, posted on the Sudbury Housing Trust website, lays out many strategies for increasing affordable housing and reaching the state targeted 10%. The Sudbury Housing Trust is an important player in that plan.
Thank you. Can we hear from the Finance Committee, please?
The Finance Committee supports this article.
And the Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen support the article.
Anybody wishes to be heard on this Article 34? Yes, sir, could you stand up?
Brian Temple, 15 Revere Road. I had some time to spend with the trust prior to town meeting, and I appreciate that, and I just want to give some of my own opinion on it. So the trust, before we vote on this, so essentially since we founded the trust, they've brought in about $2 million of income from CPA funding. $2 million of income total. Of that, it's been our annual 10% increase, plus in 2009 we gave them an incremental $750,000. In addition, the trust operates auctions where they go off in other towns and serve as 40B and affordable housing brokers for these other towns, which actually brings in income to the town of Sudbury, which is interesting. The challenge I have is that if you go through what the trust has done, you know, we've created 7 units of affordable housing on $2 million put into it. And a lot of that's because we keep going down the path of doing ownership. And so we're essentially putting out anywhere from $150,000 to $250,000 of subsidies to get single families into these houses. And if you look at the Maynard Road project you talked about, originally that was about a $250,000 per unit subsidy. So we'll never get to our affordable housing goals, I think, at that level of subsidy. The interesting one they did was the Coolidge Corner one, where for $250,000 we got 64 units of rental property through the somewhat twisted ways affordable housing works, and that got us our 40B production plan. So I think my takeaway after looking at all this is if they were to come before town meeting, and if this was not CPA funding, we had to actually raise our taxes to do $180,000 to $250,000 subsidy, I'm not sure as a town we'd vote for it. But because it's part of the CPA funding, we're going down that path. You know, this is the 11th hour, and I think we should continue, move forward, vote for this housing trust this year. But I think next year we really need to look at, are we really getting what we need to from the CPC deciding to give the money to the trust or not. The final thing I'll say is that, and this is perhaps the most, this was the less positive thing I came across. So when we adopted the Sudbury Housing Trust in 2006, we gave the trust the right to go off and purchase property simply by going before the Board of Selectmen and purchasing the property. So what happened with Manor Road is they went off, they decided to go purchase the property, went before the Board of Selectmen in a meeting, and the Selectmen approved it. It was a different board. It was not this board. At that meeting, in the meeting minutes, there's no discussion of the abutters, no engagement of the abutters. The abutters weren't even aware that the trust was going to go purchase property, and at the time put in place a 6-unit development. The trust is asking us to give them another $340,000. So my one question for the Board of Selectmen. If the trust were to come before you again and ask to purchase property, can you make a commitment to the hall that you will make sure that the abutters and the neighbors get a say before the trust buys property so that we don't go through the same problems we went through on Maynard Road where they purchased the property, 3 days later or 4 days later, they sent out an email saying, we're your new neighbor, and suddenly all the neighbors on Maynard Road were faced with a 6-unit development. I don't think when we put the trust in place, we realized that we were, to some extent, giving our rights up to review of that. So will you make sure we have neighborhood review before the trust buys property, that they're going to develop into multi-unit developments?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 34? I see no one. Although this is a majority vote, all those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by well more than a majority. We are now moving on to Article 35, community CPA funding for historic projects. And Jim Hill will make us a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Jim Hill, 199 Concord Road, Vice Chair of the Historic Commission. I move in the words of the article for the sum of $52,300 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you. This article for $52,300 comprises five different projects. It's a little delayed, excuse me. That's a picture of the Hosmer House, which will be one of the projects before us, is to paint the Hosmer House. The exterior painting of the Hosmer House will be the same color that's used, and also there will be minor restoration of the leaking windows to resolve some of the water damage done during the painting process. That project is $24,500. Is that correct? $24,000 even, excuse me. Okay. I'm taking them slightly out of order here. Prior to that is the, which you see on the view screen, is the historic map preservation. This is an interesting project. It's for $12,000. It's actually three maps from the late 1800s of the town cemeteries, as well as two ledgers that shows who's buried in those cemeteries. And they were at the DPW. DPW has passed them on to the Historical Commission for us to do the preservation. They'll then go with the preserved documents, original documents, will then go with the town clerk with the storage of the historical documents that the town clerk's office is working on, and copies will be then given to the DPW for their use on a daily basis or when they need to. The next project is town cemetery signage, which is $6,500. Can you give me that picture, Mark? What's this picture here? This is to install six signs identifying the different town managed cemeteries. If you've been to Old Town Cemetery, it's hard to tell where Old Town Cemetery ends and New Town Cemetery starts. These signs here, I'm using a picture of the Sudbury Baseball Complex at Featherland Park. The reason being is the sign is going to be similar in style in that it would have the two stone posts and then a little bit more discreet sign in between it. The idea is to have the signs be consistent with other projects within the town. Go to the next slide. This project is for an invasive plant container. The invasive plants at different historic sites within the town have been harvested by SWEET, which is a local organization, soon to be a 501c3, I believe it's called. So they'll be able to accept donations if anyone is making out their donation list this year. This particular unit here will be to take the invasive plants that they're pulling out at no charge to the town They will take them, and then they need to store them somewhere until they die. Currently, what they're doing is storing them in plastic bags in their garages across the town. This would allow them to work with the DPW to store this container at the DPW location. They'd be able to go and dispose of the product there, and then after it dies, then the dumpster would then be emptied at Sweet's expense, would be emptied and taken out, and they would refill it again. We anticipate having worked with Sweet that it would be approximately 8 or 9 times a year that they would actually fill and empty this container. So you can see it's a lot of product that they're taking and putting away. Mark, next one. An information kiosk. This is our last project. The information kiosk, this is actually kind of a temporary kiosk, which we'll use at different sites. Initially, it's to be installed right near Revolutionary War Cemetery and the Hearst House and the Town Pound. These are all three projects that we've done with CPA funding and under the benefit of the town. We get questions about what's going on in the cemetery. If any of you had driven by last year, you would have seen all these little yellow flags throughout the cemetery. And we had consistent questions of what that was. We had planned on installing a permanent kiosk in that location, but based on the fact that we don't know the names of all the people that are buried or how many gravestones or grave sites that we will find and be able to identify in the cemetery itself, what we decided to do is come to you, ask for a temporary sign or one that can be used at one location, removed, and then moved to another location. And once a permanent one is completed, this will allow us to put things up, information up that townspeople will have access to, so when they're walking by, they can stop and they can see. For example, those little yellow flags, those were the identifiers of what we believe to be grave sites within the cemetery that have no gravestones. So that's what the ground penetrating radar did. We've also done projects with the Hearst House where people had questions on what that was, as well as at the Town Pound. This kiosk is going to be sturdy enough that it can be installed, be there for a number of years, and removed and moved to another location for another CPA project or another historic project at that time. I hope that everyone will support us in moving forward on this project. Thank you.
Finance Committee, Bill Nealon.
The Finance Committee supports this article.
Selectman John Drabinski.
Board of Selectmen support the article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 35? I see no one. All those in favor signify with majority vote. Raise your cards. Those opposed? It passes by well more than a majority. Article 36. And Jody Kablak, Planning and Community Development Director, to make a motion.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $100,000 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Kablak?
Jody Kablak, Director of Planning and Community Development. This article seeks $100,000 in CPA funds for historic landscaping and restoration for the construction phase of the Sudbury Town Improvement Project, which passed under Article 19 yesterday evening. These funds are included in the total project budget cost that was discussed previously, that $1.8 million. It's estimated that approximately $100,000 of additional landscaping and historic restoration would be needed to complete the project. These items would include things such as landscaping on the town common, ornamental lighting, and other site improvements to enhance the historic nature and open space qualities of the town center area, as well as the assistance of a landscape architect to help us in designing this. The community's recorded goals and objectives served in guiding principles for the improvement plan, which included the preservation of historic, cultural, and natural resources in the center, improving safety and accessibility for all users of the center, including pedestrians, bicycles, and vehicles, improving traffic capacity, but not speed, and protecting the scale and the character of the center. And several of these aesthetic improvements are things that were very highly rated as goals of the project, and therefore the inclusion of additional funding for landscaping was thought to be very valuable to this project. So these funds are critical to the final landscaping of the project, and it is our hope that the town center will become a showpiece of Sudbury's history and a vibrant and safe place for all of its residents, and I urge your support.
Bill Nealon, FinCom.
The Finance Committee supports this article.
John Drabinski, Selectman.
Board of Selectmen support the article, Mr. Moderator.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 36? I see no one. All those, this is a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes well more than a majority. We're now on Article 37, LS Softball Field and Davis Fedlin Field Design. Richard Williamson of the Park and Rec to make the motion.
I move in the words of the article, this is identical to what you see in the warrant.
Actually, I'm afraid you're going to have to read all that.
Have to read that.
You want to move back so they can hear you from the mic, but...
Okay. To see if the town will vote to appropriate an amount not to exceed $336,000 from the Community Preservation Act funds as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee. For the purpose of completing the following projects as proposed and recommended by the Park and Recreation Commission. Improvement of the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School Women's Softball Field and Fedlin Park Redesign and Davis Field Design, or act on anything relative thereto. All appropriations will be allocated to the recreation.
Hang on 1 second. Can I see you, please?
Yeah, the same motion. Just before.
Does he have?
That's probably the warrant.
It's the warrant. It's not the motion.
Okay, I'll read this one. Okay.
Before you do. Mark, that's probably the warrant article. Do we have something that says move to approve the recommendation? Can you put that
yes.
up there?
Okay, I'll read that.
Start reading it, and he'll put it up there.
Okay. Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $336,000 for the following projects. One, $256,000 for the purpose of reconstructing the women's softball field on the property of the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, subject to the town entering into a mutually satisfactory intermunicipal agreement with the Lincoln Sudbury Regional School District regarding town use of the softball field prior to release of the appropriated funds and submitted to the Community Preservation Committee of an itemized accounting of the project costs upon final expenditure of the Sudbury CPA funds. Two, $30,000 for the engineering and design services to reconfigure Fetherland Field. And three, $50,000 for engineering and design services to reconfigure Davis Field. All appropriations will be allocated to the recreation category and funded from FY14 revenue.
Does that receive a second?
It does.
And while they're waiting to start, the difference between the motion and the article you see in the warrant is actually set out in the report in the warrant. So if you follow the report, you'll actually see virtually the same what the motion he is that he actually made.
So there are three parts of the article, but I want to point out from the beginning that they are a very integrated approach to providing the best recreational experiences for the residents of Sudbury. We had a Gale Associates do a study of all of the recreational fields in Sudbury, including those at the regional high school last year. And out of that report came the motion that you see before you. The most significant deficiency in town was the girls' softball field. So let me start with that, and then I'll cover the other two projects. The softball field, as CPA funds requested, are $256,000. But private funding has been raised to $70,000, a significant private funding for the project for a total project cost of $326,000. Why do you want to do this? Well, to improve the field condition, I'll say more about that in a moment, bring the field up to the MIAA, that's the Massachusetts Interscholastic Athletic Association standards, and someone may have to help me on NFHS. But at any rate, the standards are they're not up to the standards today, and enhance the safety of the players. I'll show you a picture of why that's a concern. How to do that? Regrade and level the field. Resurface the field. Install irrigation and drainage systems. Install fencing and extend electricity to the field. So here's a photo, two photos of the field. The one on the left shows you the state of the playing field. And if you think Bill Buckner had a problem at Fenway Park, imagine the girls' softball team fielding on a surface like that. It's just crabgrass and dirt. It's not a really playable surface. And then over on the right, you can barely see it in the figure there, but there's a young lady in pink who's standing out there in right field, and she's standing 40 inches below home plate. This is not at all a level field. And go on to the next one. Now, there's an important aspect of this is said in the motion. We need to establish an intermunicipal agreement for the softball field. And I want to emphasize for the softball field. There's been a lot of conversation about a more global agreement about all of the facilities at Lincoln Sudbury. That is not part of this motion. It's strictly concerning the softball field. We can address those other aspects subsequently. And it's a condition on establishing that agreement between the town of Sudbury and the school committee. And it will allow the expanded use of the softball field by the Sudbury Park and Recreation Commission. And the project has the support of the Lincoln Sudbury High School Committee. Now, so I urge you to support this, and I show these photos. There are approximately 300 girls and women who participate in softball and ask for your support. And quite a few of these, actually, or a fair number, are from Lincoln, which does not have their own softball program. And before I leave this, I have to look up on the upper right where you see members of the girls' softball, younger girls. And in passing, I should note that my oldest daughter has fond memories of the coach that was her first coach in girls' softball here in Sudbury. And he was very supportive, and she really loved the sport. His name is Myron Fox, the first coach.
The only thing I remember about that team, we were 0-13.
0-13. Let me tell you, it was quite a task for Myron to keep these girls encouraged. Every time they got on base, they felt like $1 million, even if they lost the game. So let me go to the second project. This is the Featherland Field redesign for 30K. Here's an aerial view of Featherland Field. You see four Little League fields there. You see four tennis courts over in the lower right, and you see a softball field that is used by a number of teams, including the men's softball. And the thought is, how might we better use this space? Part of it is maybe reconfiguring that softball field. One aspect is actually possibly finding another place for the men's softball to play, and how do we accommodate both the town teams and the Lincoln Sudbury team that sometimes uses this field. So that's what we hope to do with the 30K. And this is the Gale report will guide us in that regard. So we want to see how we can better utilize it by a reconfiguration, if possible, and by rearranging user groups and fields. Finally, I'll go to the Davis Field design. We want to see if we can't expand the number of recreational groups that can use Davis Field. There are many limitations at the field today, and there's a big pressure for more space for the teams that play on our fields. And the thought is maybe we can get more utilization by leveling it and providing better drainage. There are a number of limitations that must be addressed, and it's going to take some expertise by a recreational planning contractor to point out what can be done. Let me see, have the next few graphs. This is a little dim, but the dark green area there is the mowed area of Davis Field. And I might say that Davis Field was put together by Sudbury farmer Earl Neeter about 30 years ago. And he said, I'll level the whole thing, and I'll plant some grass as long as you allow me to take hay from the area around it. So you can see the evidence of Earl Neeter's haying operations. In fact, his equipment is barely visible above the arrow for the slope there. And although you can't see it, there are soccer goals here. And the soccer uses this some of the time, but not a lot of the time because it's not very level. It tends to be very, very wet. And I point out some of the limitations. There's a slope up there near the parking lot. There are low spots where I point out there. They tend to be very wet. There are two ponds nearby, and there's a wetland. So what you can do has to fit in with those limitations, and we need a contractor to figure out how that might be done. The field is currently used by a number of, quote, other groups, like kite flyers, frisbee players, model airplane flyers, rocket launchers, and dog walkers. And it could be potentially used for many more groups here in Sudbury. So, can I have the last slide? So, at any rate, we urge your support for this article. Thank you.
Finance Committee, Bill Neeland.
The Finance Committee supports the article.
John Drabinski, Selectman.
Board of Selectmen support the article, Mr. Moderator.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 37? Yes, sir. Why don't you come right up front here, Bob?
Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. The softball field, I'm going to be just talking about that. The softball field is, quite frankly, a safety hazard. The softball field is in deplorable condition. I would never let my children play on that field and would recommend no one else play on that field. After saying that, I have a major problems with this article. Of the 250,000 and change that they're talking about, that will be used, not one penny is being contributed by Lincoln taxpayers. This property is not on Sudbury-owned property. It is on Lincoln-Sudbury land. This capital improvement for Lincoln-Sudbury High School is being paid by only Sudbury taxpayers. In my opinion, it should be paid by Lincoln-Sudbury High School as a capital improvement. It is not fair and not correct.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 37? Yes, could you stand up, please? Can we get a mic to this gentleman?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Jeff Day, 325 Peckham Road. I've had the privilege of coaching in this town for 15 years under the baseball program. I've also had the privilege of coaching 5 years in the softball program. So I've seen both sides from the inside. The programs are similar, but they're different. They're similar in the way that they have got great adults, great support. Many of coaches are in this room, up on that stage. And our kids enjoy learning life lessons of the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. And even in an 0-13 team, they learn how to pull together. They learn how to be teammates. So the programs are very similar in that way. They're very different in this way. The boys' teams play on 13 fields in this town. 3 are lit. 2-3 of them I would call moderately substandard. Softball fields in town, there are 6. One of them is lit. It is played by the men, on the men's, by the men's league. The other 5, one of them is this field. That leaves 4. The LS field, as you can see, is not safe, as it's been mentioned. 2 years ago, I was scheduled to play the team from Waltham on that field in the summer. The coach came up and asked if we could move the game to a different field. We have not been back since. Our Sudbury Girls Softball League does not play on this field for those reasons. A group of parents got together and tried to put together a program to level this field and get the funding to take care of this and bring this field online, to bring it from four fields to five fields, a field that all our kids would be proud to play on. And if this passes, we will put on our Sudbury Girls Softball League. Our kindergarten clinics will go on this field. Our first and second grade will go on this field. Third and fourth, fifth and sixth, seventh and eighth. There will not be a time when this field does not have a Sudbury Girls Softball player on it. We also intend to open it up to the Sudbury Women's Softball League. For those of you who don't know, there is a Sudbury Women's Softball League that plays in town. They also play on those fields, those three fields that I've mentioned before. So the idea is to fix this field. You'll note that we have raised or contributed $70,000 towards this effort. It's a lot of cupcakes, a lot of car washes, a lot of donations from a lot of people. Thank you very much. And when, and hopefully this passes, we will invite you all to opening day. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the article? Yes, right there.
Elizabeth Dow, 52 Horse Pond Road. When we rebuilt the high school, why was this not something that was factored in? Why are we doing this now? I mean, we rebuilt the high school, we rebuilt some fields. Why was the girls' field never brought to standards then?
Can we, Mr. Williamson, for an answer?
I can give you a partial answer to that. When the high school was built, there was a lot of concern about wetlands around the high school. And one of the restrictions put on the athletic fields at the high school was that there would be no irrigation. And it turns out that didn't work. The grass on the boys' baseball fields died. And finally, Kevin Rossley and the crew at Lincoln Sudbury said, are we going to have athletic fields or not? We've got to do something about irrigation. So they were able to get wells drilled and support the boys' field, which was the highest priority because it was totally unplayable. The girls were left there. There was some grass there, not the best grass, and so the girls' softball field was left behind, and it never was really brought up to the standards it should have been. There were a lot of considerations of how to best use the money for the high school, and a lot of things were changed at the last minute. But one of the things that was not changed was to put more money into the girls' softball field. So it's overdue.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Mr. Morley.
I just wanted to quickly speak to Mr. Stein's comments in case there's any confusion. The softball field is on Lincoln Sudbury property, which is a separate governmental entity. That is why, I mean, if it were just for the girls' softball team at Lincoln Sudbury, the CPC would not have approved this article. This is a softball field for the girls' team at Lincoln Sudbury and for, as you just heard Mr. Dade eloquently say, for tons of young girls in town and hopefully for adult women in town. And thirdly, the CPC requirement, which is what was also done on the football track complex, is that there be a legal agreement allowing the Park and Rec of Sudbury to utilize this field together with Lincoln Sudbury. So we are acquiring a legal right to use land that we don't currently own. And that is why the CPC recommends it, because it doesn't just help 30 girls or whatever at the high school, which is a high school problem. It helps girls and women throughout the town. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes.
Nancy Marshall for the Lincoln Sudbury Regional School Committee. The committee has fully supported this undertaking and is grateful for the Friends of LS Softball for their diligent, tireless work to put this proposal forward to Sudbury. And just as a point of reference, there's a very good faith effort ongoing in Lincoln to secure funds to also support this. We had a vote at town meeting that unanimously supported it. There has been some general issues with regard to the mechanics of releasing the funds that we're working through. We've had meetings with both towns' boards of recreation, both towns' boards of selectmen. We've had CPC folks from both towns present, and I had four members of our committee present. It was we had a meeting the Monday after April break. There are ongoing efforts to ensure that there is good faith support from Lincoln. I think the school committee is committed to working through that very diligently, and the goal is ground is planned to be broken come fall, and there will be shared support from both communities. Thank you.
Yes? Hang on a second. Yeah, that's not really a point of order, but let's answer the question. One of the people allowed to speak without permission from the hall are folks who are on elected regional officials as well as regional employees from not only LS but also from Minuteman Regional High School. Anybody else wish to speak? Yes, right there, sir. You're next. Just one of you at a time.
Anthony Fortunato, 101 Moore Road. Can we clarify the support from the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School? Because I was at a Board of Selectmen meeting where there was a lot of contingencies on the support, and those contingencies weren't necessarily supported by the Sudbury residents. So is it an unconditional support if we give them the funding, or is there conditions on it for Lincoln Park and Rec?
The motion that you speak to that was reported at the Board of Selectmen meeting, which I think was on April 9th, was actually rescinded by the school committee at our meeting on April 23rd, so the restrictions are lifted.
Thank you.
235 Willis Road, Richard Polson. All I have to say, I think women's softball is phenomenal. I like it actually better than soccer. But the question is this. Show me the money. If Lincoln is willing to donate, can't we look at the numbers and have people? We got a lot of smart, successful, and educated people in both Lincoln and Sudbury. They have a ton of money. Why don't they kick in if they're advocates for softball like I am? How about not having a fundraiser? I know he said he raised $70,000. Have everybody kick in. There's a lot of smart and successful and wealthy people in both towns. If they want to make this a better place to play, have everybody donate a little bit of money. How about meeting us halfway? Give us $100,000 or something. You know, you can talk all you want, but show us the money. That's all I have to say. I mean, I don't mind. I think women's softball is phenomenal, but, you know, it's easy to make $1 million. It's easy to spend $1 million. It's hard to make it. That's all I'm saying. Everybody kick in a little bit. Thank you.
Anybody who else wishes to speak but for the call of the question? One, two, anyone else? Two people for the benefit of the hall. Does that receive a second? It does. All those in favor of the call of question signify by raising your cards. Raise your hands, please. Those opposed, it's well more than two-thirds. So we're going to go to a vote on Article 37. It's a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it's well more than a majority. It passes. We're moving on to 38. Mr. Morley. Wait. Mr. Morley. Article 38, Community Preservation Fund, General Budget and Appropriations.
Move to appropriate the sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation Budget for FY14 Community Preservation Surtax: $80,000 administrative and operating costs, $1,136,657 in debt service, and further to reserve the following funds:
$86,147 for historic reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley for presentation.
Each year, this last CPA article is the place where we do what the town financial staff needs us to do after voting all of our previous articles, allocating CPA monies to their rightful account. You see here an estimate for administrative expenses of $80,000. The statute allows us up to 5% of annual revenue, which is a lot more than 80. We've averaged around 2% in the time we've had the CPA. The unused portion of this estimate gets returned to the town CPA fund each year. The second line item is the annual debt service on monies that we borrowed to purchase land. And lastly, this year we did not spend the minimum 10% that the statute requires that we either spend or set aside for historic preservation. This $86,147 is that set aside. We did spend 10% or more on the other 10% categories, open space and affordable housing. I would like to thank the hall again for your support of the CPA and Sudbury program. Thank all of the volunteers on my committee and others, as well as the dedicated town staff whose efforts we rely upon so much. Thanks and good night, except I'm here for questions.
Finance Committee, Bill Nealon.
Finance Committee supports this article.
Selectman John Drabinski.
Would a selectman support the article, Mr. Moderator?
Anyone wish to be heard on this article? Yes, way in the back. Can we get a mic? Can you stand up, sir?
Very quickly, Brian Semple, 15 Revere. So my comment was just on your initial presentation where you said that the CPA has brought in was $1.6 million in interest on the money that you had in the bank. I think that was the figure that was quoted. I see that number every time, and I think it's a little, I think it needs to be a little bit clearer that you do, but you're also putting out $1.1 million in debt service. And I believe last time we asked this question, the percentage of money you're paying on your debt is significantly greater than the amount of money that you're getting on interest of any money in the bank. And so when we sit here and we say we're making money, we're really not, because you're also about $15 million in debt by the end of the year. So I think maybe a little bit clearer on how the accounting actually works out would be helpful.
Sure. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Do you want to separate, or I'll forget what you asked if we don't.
Hang on. Let me take care of that. Mr. Semple, we're going to answer the questions as they come, so why don't we answer that one right
now? That was
more
of an observation, but yeah.
Oh, you don't require?
I would like to.
You'll get a chance. Hang on. Why don't you finish, Mr. Semple?
Okay, and second question is, so $80,000 administrative operating costs, is the CPC paying OPEB benefits and everything for all the administrative people that are that you guys are using?
No, we do not.
Okay, why not?
I don't know.
Well, we should. We have to start somewhere.
So that's beyond my pay grade. It's not in the scope of our committee, so I don't know those things. We do pay money towards the salaries of support staff.
Okay, that's disappointing because this is okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to address some of the things
yes,
you said about the debt.
Go ahead.
We actually did go into that very carefully we go in very carefully with the Finance Committee every year, actually, and Mr. Jacobson in particular has been helpful with the whole issue of borrowing and debt bonding, et cetera. And Mr. Stein had a lot of concerns in the last couple of years. We actually were roughly making more money on our investments than we were paying on our debt, but we knew that wasn't going to last forever. Plus, we also knew we couldn't continue to carry the large amount of cash that we had in the bank, as it were. The point of that cash has been met. We were able, as we expected and a lot of people didn't expect, we were able to acquire Pantry Brook Farm. And as we had promised in those previous years, we spent over $4 million of our cash to do so. So now our cash amount that we have is much lower, but still high enough so that should someone walk into Jody's office next week and want to sell their land, that we may have possibilities of dealing with it. Thank you.
Marianne Bilodeau, Assistant Town Manager.
In regards to the OPEB question that you had, where we're not putting money in for all employees now, we wouldn't start doing it with the CPA group until we were doing it with all groups.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 38? I see no one. This is a majority vote on the budget. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It passes by well more than a majority. We're on Article 39. Mr. Kavanaugh, James Kavanaugh, in the audience. Could he come forward, please?
Jim Kavanaugh, Codman Drive. Move to amend the Town of Sudbury bylaws, Article 5, Public Safety, by deleting Section 8 therefrom and substituting a new Section 8, which reads as follows. And note that most of this language is actually the same as the current bylaw. No person shall fire or discharge any machine gun, pistol or revolver, rifle, air rifle or BB gun, shotgun or explosives of any kind on private property except with the written consent of the owner or legal occupant thereof or within the limits of any town-owned public property except that, in accordance with recommended wildlife management practices, the Conservation Commission, subject to any conditions it may impose, may grant permission to hunt on specific public property over which said Conservation Commission has jurisdiction. Notwithstanding the foregoing, no pistol or rifle shall be fired or discharged within 1/2 mile of any school, daycare center, church, temple, or any public building, playground, or field which children use for sports or other activities. Nothing in this bylaw shall be construed in such a way as to prohibit the lawful use of any of the above named weapons in the defense of life or property, including but not limited to removal of a rabid animal or on any range as defined in Section 9 or in any other manner in accordance with the general laws of the Commonwealth, limited by the discharge limits concerning discharge of a weapon near a residence. This section shall not apply to the discharge of historic or reproduction muskets and other weapons, including cannons, fired by organizations or partnerships for theatrical, athletic, educational, ceremonial, or other purposes as licensed or authorized by the general laws. Violation of this section shall be subject to a penalty of $300.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Kavanaugh for presentation. And we start off by saying what's the difference between this and what appears
okay.
in the warrant.
Okay. So what I read actually includes some key changes to what you've seen in the warrant when it was published. So we've taken ideas and feedback from many, many people, many of them gun owners, business owners, from some of the historical organizations in town, and we've scaled back the restrictions significantly. So the article now only restricts shooting longer range weapons, such as rifles and pistols. And just to be clear, it doesn't say that people cannot shoot rifles and pistols. It just says not near schools and playgrounds and where children play. It also does not restrict in any way the firing of all other weapons, including shotguns and BB guns and air guns. We've also added specific language to allow historical organizations to continue doing what they do. There was a lot of concern about the Sudbury Minutemen being able to shoot their muskets and other groups shooting their cannons during some of the historical events. So what we're proposing is essentially a school zone for shooting long-range pistols and rifles. Can you go to slide 4, please? So what this is showing is actually, in black, is the current bylaw as it stands today. What's red is actually what's being proposed to change. And what's highlighted in the middle is really what the substantive language change is. And that says, and I'll read it again, notwithstanding the foregoing, no pistol or rifle shall be fired or discharged within 1/2 mile of any school, daycare center, church, temple, or any public building, playground, or field which children use for sports or other activities.
And just to be clear, I know there was some concern about this restricting people's right to be able to protect themselves, and it doesn't in any way. That language hasn't been touched. Most of the rest of what you see in red is actually clarifications for some of the exceptions that I mentioned, and it includes some of the legal verbiage that that was recommended by town council. Could you go to slide two, please? So for those of you who may not be aware, there have actually been multiple instances of long-range semi-automatic gunfire near schools and playgrounds. And more specifically, it's been on a parcel of property that is behind the Newtown Cemetery in Town Center. So it's essentially between the cemetery. There's a field that is behind TI Sales off of Hudson Road and Codman Drive, kind of in that area. We researched it, and we found out that the current law only states that there's a restriction on shooting weapons, and it doesn't restrict any specific types. It just says no weapons can be fired within 500 feet of a dwelling. And police say that there's nothing they can do about it since that's what it currently states, 500 feet, which is not a far distance at all, especially considering that, you know, many weapons, pistols and rifles can travel, you know, up to and in some cases even a lot more than a mile. And this shooting is simply too close to where children live and play and go to school. And just to be clear, I support the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms, and I take it very seriously. And despite what some people might think, I'm definitely not anti-gun at all. I'm actually incredibly conservative, but for this particular issue, I feel pretty strongly. And I think it's clear that the Second Amendment gives us the right to bear arms, but it doesn't say anything about shooting long-range semi-automatic weapons within a few hundred yards of schools and playgrounds. Could you go to slide five, please? So what we're proposing is a modification to the current bylaws that would protect the areas around where kids play and go to school. It just doesn't make sense to shoot long-range guns around these areas, and we want to create a safer environment for our kids. And I would ask that you support this school zone for shooting long-range weapons. Thank you.
You done?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Finance Committee, Doug Cohen.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Selectman's position?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. We first heard from Mr. Cavanaugh last night, and the board has reviewed the materials that were provided to us at the start of town meeting. Selectman Hardy is interested in hearing the entire debate before he makes a decision as to his thoughts on the article. Mr. Drabinski and myself favor the article in support.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 39? Let's start off right here. I think we've heard from that person to your left. Yes. Could you stand up?
Laura Abrams, Horse Pond Road. I'm the owner of the property that is being targeted in this warrant article. I own the 36 acres in the center of town off Codman Drive. This warrant article should really read Codman Drive versus the Bartlett family, because I feel that we are on trial here and all of you are the jury. The law states that you cannot discharge a firearm within 500 feet of a building. Where we target shoot is over twice that distance from a building. The only place we target shoot is into a 40-foot natural dirt berm, the safest place to target shoot on 36 acres. A projectile would have to go through hundreds of yards of earth, under Concord Road, and up on the other side to reach a school. We chose this area specifically for its safety. This is a heavily wooded 36 acres. How a bullet could reach through this wooded area to any building is incomprehensible. I don't have to call the Sudbury police every time I go up there to target shoot, but I do as a courtesy. They remind me I don't have to, but they thank me for doing so. Nobody has permission, nor do I, shoot during school or on Sunday mornings during church. The only people I allow to hunt on this property are Sudbury residents or former Sudbury residents that I have known for many years, along with my husband, my daughter, my son, and a friend, Chris Alberini, who happens to be an Iraqi veteran and is a current police officer in Ashland. Perhaps many of you saw him on TV over the past several weeks. He and his search dog, Dex, were on the news after the Marathon bombings. They were the ones out searching for the terrorists, protecting us, and I thank him. How many times does hunting or target practicing happen? You may want to know. Maybe once or twice a year. So what are we really talking here? NIMBY neighbors who had a chance to buy this property before I did, but chose not to, but want to control it. NIMBY neighbors who, when the town and I settled a lawsuit and the town was going to be able to use my field for a soccer field, said, not in my backyard. We don't want the noise or the traffic. That was a time when Sudbury needed more soccer fields, and the town and I worked together to make that happen. 15 people signed this petition. 14 live on Codman Drive, 7 houses. One of them is currently for sale. Do 7 houses have the right to decide our rights? I hope not, because this not only affects my property, it affects other properties in this town. I think I've been more than reasonable, and I hope this body is too.
Anyone else care to be heard? Yes, sir. Can you come up to the mic here? Yep.
Good evening. My name is Eric Schwalm, and I live on Codman Drive. And just for full disclosure, I want to let you know that I was the one out of 15 that did not sign the petition. I was out of town that night, but I surely would have and regret not signing it. I'd like to say a few words in support of Article 39. And first, I want to let you know who I am, why I am here, and what my interest is in this article. I do live on Codman Drive. I'm a friend and neighbor of Jim, and our street abuts the Bartlett Abrams land and the firearms activity there, which is at the heart of this issue, and I'm glad that has been made very, very clear, because it hasn't always been. My interest is very simple here. I believe that a safety issue exists due to gunfire on that property. I have made that well known. The police department knows it. Ms. Bartlett and Mr. Abrams know it very well. But my interest is personal. I live on the street. I have 4 children. That street has 20 children, I believe, more or less. Some have moved out. It is a personal issue, but it's also a general issue, to the point that Jim Kavanaugh raised. I've lived here for 18 years. I have never spoken at public meeting. I'm a little nervous. I apologize for that. I have no desire to make this a habit, and I'm hoping that this is, in fact, my retirement speech tonight. I consider myself to be a very strong and vocal supporter of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, and the Tenth Amendment in particular. Those of you, and I know many in this room, know that well and have heard me say that and are probably amazed that I'm actually standing up here. I come from a family of hunters, sportsmen, and veteran over many generations since the late 1790s. I come from a farming and hunting family. I grew up around guns, hunters, police officers, military veterans. I do have a license. I have hunted. I have had training and experience. That doesn't make me an expert, but I certainly have lived in that culture, understand it, and support it very strongly. Having been involved with the complaints, the responses, and the history that Ms. Bartlett describes, ever since we moved into Sudbury, I have a pretty good understanding of the facts and the interests of each of the parties. I've stated my interest. I hope that's clear and unambiguous. I want to clear up a couple of misunderstandings that have been thrown out there, mostly on the blogosphere and on email. Those of you that have ever been affected by that can appreciate how vituperative and misinformed that can be. Specifically, I want to address a couple of things. I should also say, ironically, that given my general support of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, I've actually received many of the emails from the opposite side, from people forwarding it to me and saying, can you believe this? Can you believe they're taking away our rights? It's the emails, and those of you that have received it have read it, are very vaguely defined. They're taking away our rights. So let me just clarify a couple of things. This is not about the Second Amendment. Jim stated it correctly. The Second Amendment specifically deals with the right to keep and bear arms. The Tenth Amendment further says that any right not enumerated in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights is conveyed to the state or directly to the people. It's in there. I have a copy of it. Many of you know that and have read it, I'm sure. Therefore, it's not a Second Amendment issue. It turns out the state has quite a bit to say about this. It's been articulated clearly. I don't need to repeat it. But for those of you that, you know, view this as part of a general basket of rights, I would suggest that you look at the state government website. It is excellent. The Fish and Wildlife websites are excellent. They make very clear what you can and can't do, and I think on both sides that's been represented accurately this evening. This is not about hunting. Massachusetts law regulating hunting is probably one of the most prescribed and restrictive that I've ever seen. I didn't grow up here, but it's amazing that any hunting goes on at all. We're not seeking to restrict that. In fact, if you read the hunting laws, it is virtually impossible to go hunting with a rifle, a rifled barrel, long gun, or a pistol in the state of Massachusetts. It's quite specific and quite prescribed. We're not after that. We're not interested in that. In fact, I think almost any hunter that I know, including myself, would never hunt in an area like that with a rifle or a pistol for exactly the reason we're describing. So I want to make that clear.
Excuse me. We have a rule here about each speaker is allowed to speak 5 minutes unless they get permission of the hall to continue, and that's based on how much longer it might take you.
Okay. I would say probably 2 minutes. I ask for your permission.
And I'll take care of that. All those in favor of granting 2 minutes to this gentleman, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes, sir. You have 2 more minutes.
Okay. As I said, I'm not a public speaker. There's more at stake here than a simple issue. We believe this is a safety issue. We understand how the laws are written. We understand that the police force has to work within the laws. We're not asking to change the law or change the Constitution. We're trying to identify, recognize, and rectify what we believe is a specific safety issue in this property with the surrounding neighbors. Yes, our street is most affected, but if you look on a Google map, you'll see that there's quite a bit in range of this area. I've learned 2 things through this. One is how incredibly difficult it is to get anything done. I can't imagine what it's like to do the job that our our selectmen, our public servants, our committees, and our police have to do. It's very hard. I hope I don't have to go through it again. I would also tell you that when you read the blogosphere, it's amazing how distorted things can be, even within the same string of a message. So I would ask this of all of you. Please understand the specifics here. This is not a general, abstract issue about rights as they're enshrined in the Constitution. It has nothing to do with that. Get the information, get the facts, get all the facts. There are police records, there are blogs, there are articles, there are your neighbors. Get all the facts. I trust that the seasoned and considered judgment of this audience will be correct, and we will support it in whatever way it goes. I would just ask you to make sure that you don't get pulled into an argument about abstract rights and understand what this is specifically about. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the time and the extension. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard? There's someone way in the back there on the rail.
Hal Cutler, 163 Landham Road. This evening at the Wayside Inn, the Sudbury Companies of Militia and Minute are celebrating their 50th birthday. 50 years ago, May 21st, 12 men got together, many names you'd recognize, John Powers, Frank Opice, and others, and formed the Sudbury Companies of Militia and Minute. And since that time, many of you have come to appreciate what the companies do on April 19th, if you get up early enough, perhaps on the last Saturday of September when we have our colonial fair and a mock battle with those redcoats, perhaps recently our October Battle of the Red Horse Tavern. Maybe your third and fourth graders have seen demonstrations of muskets during Colonial Day. We raised the issue of antique weapons and reproduction weapons with Mr. Kavanaugh, and I'm pleased to say that Mr. Kavanaugh and the town council came up with the amendments that we believe preserve our right to those activities, and we thank them for that. Otherwise, I have no comment on the article itself or recommendation. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the article? Please, we'll get to as many people as we can. Right here.
Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. First thing, I think we are being brought into an issue, and I think it's largely a personal issue, and it's largely an issue about one neighborhood. So I think the rest of the town is being asked to change the bylaw that affects each and every one of our houses for a personal issue that's occurring on one street. Second of all, when we talk about it not being about gun rights, that's probably true. What I see this fundamentally is about property rights. When you take a look at 500 feet from any building, that's one thing, and that leaves plenty of pockets of space for people to enjoy shooting that's legally available to them. And I saw on the screen here that there was an issue of safety. It's eluding me. There's nothing that's been brought to bear tonight that has talked about any record of safety being violated. So I think that's a specious argument. If you want to bring a list of people who've been wounded on Cutler Road, or bullets zinging by them, then I think it's more relevant to talk about safety. But it's about property rights. So talk about 500 feet from any building versus 500 yards. Now talk about any public building. Now talk about any church. Now talk about any daycare center? Now you go a half a mile in any direction. And I would say that this is a taking. This is literally a taking of property rights from people who live in Sudbury.
Kevin, hang on a minute.
I'm not trying to provoke that.
Hang on a minute. Some of you may not have heard the announcement we made at the beginning of this meeting, at the beginning of the meeting last night, and the beginning of the meeting the night before. We don't permit any booing or cheering, no matter what the speaker is. Let's just have the respect to listen out to what the gentleman has to say.
I think the general practice is 500 feet, and it's for a reason. And it's the standard throughout the state. If we're going to change that over an argument about one street and about some neighbors and affecting the property rights of one family and lay that template across the whole town, we're making a great mistake. And like I said, if just imagine what 500 yards in any direction from any public road, from any public building, any church, daycare, et cetera, you're taking the whole town and restricting the entire town. And I don't think we have the right to do that to each other. Property rights are a fundamental value of this country. Fundamental. That's what they fought the revolution for. Let's not violate the tenets of that.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard? That gentleman right there. Can we get a mic over to this gentleman?
Steve Gabler, 28 Mossman Road. I grew up target shooting and hunting, and my knowledge of the law, since I no longer do it, is pretty dated. I do see a potential safety issue in what's been described so far that has to do with a target range that Massachusetts laws, as has been stated, prevent use of much of anything besides a shotgun and a bow and arrow. But I'm unaware of what the state laws are regarding target ranges and are those being satisfied? And is it possible for children to wander across the range?
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir, on the aisle. No, this gentleman right here.
Abrams, Horse Pond Road. I have a couple of objections to this article. Mr. Matthews just covered one of them more articulately than I could have. However, I'll get to that one in a minute. The first one is safety. This article, as it's before you at this town meeting, does not address safety at all. This article sets an arbitrary distance of 1/2 mile from a number of different kinds of structures where our children ought to be able to be safe. Now, having said that, it makes no provision for safe and responsible use of firearms within that enormous distance of 1/2 mile. The Sudbury Police Department shoots and practices at the town dump, which is within 1/2 mile of a licensed daycare center at Longfellow Sports Club. So in addition to making it illegal for the Sudbury Police Department to do their practice, the more important point is that the Sudbury Police Department doesn't shoot in the direction of the daycare center, and they shoot into a 20-foot-high backstop, which prevents stray rounds of ammunition from being a threat to people or property. If there was anything inherently evil or unsafe about shooting within 1/2 mile of a daycare center, the Sudbury Police Department wouldn't do it. But this article makes no provision for responsible people to be able to shoot responsibly within 1/2 mile of these structures, even if they're not shooting in the direction of the structure, and even if they're shooting into a proper backstop which will prevent stray rounds of ammunition from being a threat to any people and any property, and especially children in schools. So don't be deceived by this. It doesn't speak to safety. That's one point. Now, Mr. Matthews covered very well the other point, and Mr. Schwann brought it out, and I'm glad he did. This is about a neighborhood dispute. And our town meeting has had a history of telling people not to bring their neighborhood disputes to town meeting. The most recent event that I recall is a few years back, we had a person in town who had a neighbor who had a wood-burning furnace. And he didn't want his neighbor to have a wood-burning furnace because he didn't like the smoke. So he came here just like Mr. Kavanaugh and Mr. Schwamm, never been here before, they're not coming back again, but they came here and they said, let's outlaw wood-burning furnaces. Well, our town meeting voted overwhelmingly against that because, as Mr. Matthews pointed out very articulately, it's a very bad practice to settle neighborhood disputes at town meeting. Now, the state law says you can't shoot within 500 feet of any building. That doesn't mean that you can go 501 feet from my house and turn around and shoot at it. And I have faith in the ability of the Sudbury Police Department and the state law, and there's a lot of state laws that enable the Sudbury Police Department to penalize that kind of conduct very severely. I have faith in their ability to do it. So, I urge you to vote against Article 39. Leave the neighborhood disputes to someplace else, not this town meeting. Thank you.
Was there a call to question over here before I called him? Hang on. Yes.
Lou, 29 Meadow Drive. I don't really want to speak to, like, the distance or this and that, but I have a son who plays on tie sales. They're there daily. It's a sports team. And I would be concerned because the statute, the laws it says now, doesn't speak to playing fields, and I thought that was a very good addition to this amendment. Especially since I guess the property is right next to Ty Sales, so I would have a concern there.
Anyone else wish to speak? Yes, sir. Right there. Can you stand up and wait for a mic to be brought to you?
Thank you. He had brought up earlier, where are the statistics that show there's been...
I just need a name and address for the
record. My name is Fritz Merlis, 11 Saddle Ridge Road. Can the people that are bringing up this petition show us statistics? You can get a gun that goes 3 miles, but do you have barriers or provisions that you have to have for safety of shooting these things? Any of that stuff in your provisions? The M50 sniper rifle goes 3 miles. So what you're doing, you're having distance. Distance is irrelevant. If they're set up and they have the proper barriers... But I wanted to see some statistic that show that there's been a rash of, you know, injuries or damage because of the distance. Do you have any of that stuff?
Hey, Mr. Smurls, let me know when you're done speaking, and then we'll let them answer
the
question.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering if there's something that we could see that justifies...
We're going to ask them as soon as you finish.
Okay. So like they had said before, reiterating, this seems to me to be a personal thing. I'd like to see the statistics. I won't want to take the property rights of... owns away, and when you have a distance, like they said, within a half a mile, there isn't any way you can shoot in Sudbury.
Okay. Do you have any statistics that can answer this gentleman's question?
I would like to answer the question if I might.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to throw in a few statistics here. Can you? Over here, you need to come to the mic.
Reports of my retirement were premature. Fred, I don't have those statistics for you. I have looked at them. They are well documented,
any website, any gun manufacturer website will give you the statistics. I can, yes, sir, I'm certain of that. I don't have them, but I can surely get them. I would just mention to you that virtually any long-barreled gun with a rifled barrel and almost all pistols shooting a cartridge travel well over 500 feet. Yes, that's true.
We don't do question and answer here.
Okay.
Yeah, well, please.
It is an easy set of statistics to get. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, over there in the corner.
Hi, my name is Michelle Bowther. I live on Magnolia Road. Well, I just want to say for the record that I feel sad that we have to be arguing about whether we think it's a good idea to have guns anywhere near daycare centers, schools, and that it's becoming a conversation about the Second Amendment and a conversation about property rights. I can't imagine there'd be any objection to wanting to keep our kids safe, and it seems like everything else should be second to that.
Yes, against the wall there.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Josh Lieberman on Hopesville Brown Road, and I urge you to vote no against Article 39. It's clear this is a neighborhood dispute, a feud among a few neighbors on Codman Drive, has been stated. To be clear, I don't know these people. I don't know the property. I have nothing to do with them directly or indirectly. However, also has been stated, it's just the Sudbury residents should not be burdened to have to deal with this issue amongst really just a few people. And protecting private property rights is really an issue in itself. But to address Article 39 and to acknowledge that safety really is number one with firearms and hunting. I've been hearing different sides, and we've been asked for some statistics and some facts. I took the time to call the police. I also called the division ahead of Fish and Wildlife in Massachusetts. I also spoke with the leaders in the federal property for Assabet Wildlife Management, where hunting and shooting is allowed. Apparently, statistics and numbers of licensed hunters and shooters have been recorded for the past 30 years, not before, that's when they started, and 71,000 hunters and shooters get licensed each year in Massachusetts. So 71,000 times 30 years is a total of 2,130,000 hunters and shooters. In that time frame, there have been two incidents with firearms in Massachusetts, not in Sudbury, in all of Massachusetts. While two is still a bad number, there should be zero, it is statistically inconsequential. For comparison, in the same period of time, please don't laugh, there were 546,000 serious hospitalizing bicycle accidents. We heard one gentleman, last night we were talking about the town center. He had an accident in the town center. How many of you know of anybody that's ever had an accident involving more than one person with a firearm? Anybody? I don't see any hands. So that's 546,000 serious bicycle riding accidents in the same period of time and 104,000 serious skateboarding accidents. Okay. Furthermore, also as stated by several folks here, the current Massachusetts firearms and hunting laws are among the strictest in the country and designed for safety, requiring background checks, safety training, certification and licensing, and the hunting laws are strictly enforced in shooting laws. Okay, so to recap, a feud among a few neighbors should really be settled among the neighbors, and the whole town shouldn't be burdened or negatively impacted. The firearms and hunting laws are designed for safety and are proven, and the numbers are statistically inconsequential. 650,000 serious bicycle and skateboard accidents and two firearms incidents in 30 years. Okay, so please vote no to Article 39. Thank you.
Anyone else wish? The question has been called. Is there a second to that? How many people would like to speak and offer new information? One, two, three, four,
four people, maybe five, would like to speak. Keep that in mind when you're making your vote. It's a two-thirds vote. Those in favor of the call to question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it does not receive a two-thirds vote. We'll go on a little longer. Hey, that doesn't work here. All the way back. All the way back.
Walter Bent, 539 Hudson Road. I just want to say the guy that spoke from Carmen Drive said he was not taking anybody's rights away, which he is, because the school abuts approximately roughly around 200 acres of wildlife management that the state owns that my family donated, I think, in the 60s, where I was taught to hunt and use a firearm. Now I want to bring my 7-year-old son out there to do that, where it's legal, and it abuts school property plus my family property. But now, since it's abutting the school, I cannot hunt there or bring my son out there. So you are taking people's rights away and heritage away by doing that. Also, I've been hunting out there on state property where it's legal, and there's cross-country kids from LS running through the state property where I'm legal to hunt, and I'm well enough away from buildings and houses, and the kids are running through. Obviously, I'm not going to approach them. I walk away from them. I use my brain. You know, I'm not out there trying to shoot a kid running through the woods. I'm out there hunting deer. And there's signs saying that this is wildlife management, and they're still running through it. So, you know what I mean? You got to give a little to get a little. The kids shouldn't be running through the woods where it's legal to hunt. And you are taking my right away by bringing my two boys up to go hunting where my father brought me 35 years ago. So you are taking my right away. Thank you.
Okay. A few more comments. Right over there.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Do we want to wait for a tragedy?
Just have your name and address for the record.
I beg your pardon. Leonard Simon, Meadowbrook Drive, Meadowbrook Circle, Sudbury. Do we want to wait for a tragedy with another child being hit by a stray bullet, intentionally shot from a property in Sudbury, to wake up to the fact that these things are dangerous? And they will hit people even when they are shooting at a target. This is a common sense safety measure, no matter how you cut it. The petitioner's report notes that the bullets from these firearms can go over a mile. His article asks only for an extension of half a mile. I would ask the petitioner if he would accept an amendment, a very simple one, to say that no firearm shall be discharged within the distance from a school, playground, etc., for the distance from which the bullet can travel from the muzzle of the firearm to one of those areas where our children and our families are praying or playing. Very simple.
Yes. Right over there. Yes. Fine. Mark, can you do that? While he's doing that,
Go ahead.
Is it on?
Yeah, it's on.
John Baranos.
Yes.
Not true.
It's on.
I had a slide that will clarify this. It'll take 10 seconds. Mark.
Mark, can you do his slide?
You know, let's get real. I mean, okay, let's triangulate. We got the school on Concord Road. Here's a map of, you know, Sudbury Maps Online of the area in question. So what you're doing is you're triangulating. He's saying, okay, if I go some distance, X, from the various facilities that he's named as safety, schools, churches, play whatever, and all that. But the two that are critical are noise. You draw a half-mile radius from noise, a half-mile radius from Nixon School, as shown here, with the goal in mind of pretty much knocking G, assessor's parcel number, G09-0300, 26.42 acres by, you know, Laura Bartlett or Abrams, whatever. That pretty much, I hope it's clear, knocks that parcel off, you know, out of contention that there can be no, you know, what could have been done is you could have said that there is a safety issue. You know, what's the difference between 500 yards and a half mile? About a quarter of a mile. So in part of his presentation, he's talking about 500 yards, and he's skipping to. But what he's done here is he's drawn these lines deliberately, and you can see where the two arcs intersect at the west, about one-third of the way down from the west boundary of the parcel, pretty much deliberately attempting to, you know, as Mr. Matthews said, confiscate this parcel, for the purposes of use. And that's the geometry of it. So it's not near a school. There's no safety issue. It's all made up stuff. But more so than that, I could get into more, but I told you I'd be brief. These bullets are not, I assume they're not cruise missiles. They're normal projectiles, so they're not going over hills, around trees, and so on and so forth. They're shooting into a berm. So I think the whole argument, I mean, this, and as I told Larry and John last night at the hearing, and I guess they didn't listen to me too well because they're not supporting it, but this reminds me very much of the Concord town meeting last year, the cat leash law, that made this 11 o'clock news, where two neighbors couldn't get along. They wasted the town's time for 2 hours, and in the end of the day, the town meeting said, why don't you two neighbors go work it out? Thank you. So let's defeat this thing.
Hang on. Mark, can we put that back up? Lenny, was it red line? Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. You've been patient. Can we get a mic to this gentleman? Okay.
My name is John Byrne. I live on Basswood Ave in the Pine Lakes area. I'll be brief. I don't have a dog in this fight. It's just what got me started was an article in the Sudbury Crier. But in the Pine Lakes area, I've lived there for 14 years. We coexist with hunters and non-hunters like myself. The hunters I know are all good family people, all responsible. Never have I ever heard of any incident even coming near close to a child with a firearm or a discharge. You know, this isn't Cambridge or Brookline or Newton. I moved from Newton to come to Sudbury here. I read this article right after the Newtown shooting, within a month, and it was about the Codman Drive residents. And one of the things it said there was in this article in the Sudbury Crier was, we've heard automatic guns being fired not too far from elementary schools, and a few of us got together and thought, that's crazy. That is crazy. You're basically saying there's machine guns right next to an elementary school right after the Newtown tragedy. I thought the timing was bad. And more I hear from what's going on tonight, this is a neighbor's dispute. a neighbor's dispute is going to ban hunting in Sudbury forever. I mean, this is where the Second Amendment was born. And I'm not a huge gun rights person, don't get me wrong. But the fact we're, you know, Rosiah Haynes, who the Haynes School was named after, is buried right next to us. I mean, who died at the Battle of Lexington Concord, and now we're going to take away gun rights from law-abiding hunters. It's just, there is no safety issue. You just heard statistics, real statistics. It doesn't happen. I've never heard of any child coming in contact with a hunter ever. And now you want to change it to a half mile. This is crazy. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. The question has been called. Is that seconded? All those who'd like to speak but for the call, the question, signify by raising your cards. One, two, three, four, five or six. Six would like to speak. This is a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it is now more than two-thirds. We're going into a vote. This is a majority vote. We have the main motion on the screen. Everybody understand it? All those in favor of the motion on the screen signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it is defeated. We're going on to Article 40. Can we have a motion under Article 40, please? Mr. DePompei. Please. Fine. Do we have that on the view graph? The motion is as you see it on the view graph. Move to amend the town bylaws, Article 2, the government of town meeting, by adding the following section. Section 19, if any expense line item in the fiscal year total operating budget at the annual town meeting. Mr. DePompei, you want to help me out here because I can't see that far.
Section 19, if any expense line item in the fiscal year total operating budget at the annual town meeting, i.e. as promulgated in the warrant under Article 4, either as moved or as amended by debate, increases by more than, we have a delay here, ...25% or $250,000, then the moderator shall accept a motion to lay the line item on the table and take a vote to determine if it should be delayed for additional study, understanding, and then to be taken up at the next scheduled session of the town meeting.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. DePompei.
Okay, so how does this differ from what I put in the warrant? First of all, for those of you who haven't done articles in the warrant, you submit them January 31st. That's the deadline for submitting the articles. Then you vet them through different people in the town and through committees, and you find out there really are legitimate questions and legitimate reasons to change some of your articles. But there's really no mechanism to show those change until you get to town meeting. So that's why this is amended from what you read. Now, what are the differences? If what I've done in this chart, and hopefully the colors show up properly, is if you read the unhighlighted portion of the article with the yellow highlights, don't read the green, that's the way it reads. If you read the unhighlighted portion, omit the yellow highlights and read the green highlights, that's the way it's amended. So okay. Basically, the real substantive change that was made, well, there were two. One was to define what the limits are, the 25% and the $250,000. That's a change. We changed one of those line items by 25%. Or $250,000, then the moderator, and this is the other change, then the moderator, okay, will stop the proceeding. If I say this incorrectly from your standpoint, let me know. The moderator will stop the discussion at that point and ask for a vote. If you want to vote on that budget line item, or if you prefer to delay that budget line item until we can get more, just until the next scheduled evening of town meeting, so you can better understand what that change is all about.
Yeah, the only thing is I wouldn't stop to me. Someone has to make a motion.
Excuse me, that's correct. The moderator would not stop, but we have the right. The moderator will ask if anyone would like to make a motion to delay the discussion of that article for one night, and then you have to vote your approval for it. So it's not the article doesn't go away, doesn't disappear, doesn't automatically stop. It gives you the right to look at it and say, you know, I'd like to understand more about that. Let me go back and read what the justification is for that change. Now, why did I think this was appropriate? Well, I thought it was appropriate because for those of you that were at town meeting last year, you may recall that on the evening of town meeting, when we got to the budget article 4 in the warrant, and it came up, we had a couple million dollars worth of changes. So we had the warrant for 30 days. We studied it. We put our rationale together for why we thought the budget was appropriate or not appropriate. And then if you were like me, you didn't even see the change sheet out front. You came in here and suddenly it was changed. And you had to run back out front and get the change so you could see what they were trying to do. But in any case, we changed over $1 million in that meeting. I think most of us voted at that meeting without truly understanding what those changes are. I think the taxpayers deserve a little more consideration when we're voting these budgets. You know, $500,000 here, $500,000 there, pretty soon it adds up. So that's really what this article is. If you want to know what some of the changes were last year, I have another slide. And it'll be with us in a minute. Hopefully.
Mr. DePompei?
No, it's a graph. In any case, that's the basic argument. So, yes, sir, I'm done.
Great, thank you. Okay, we're going to start with the Finance Committee. I understand they don't have a position because they're seeing the amendment for for recent times, and so they're going to caucus. And while they do that, we'll go on and get the selectmen's. I'm sorry. The reason I'm saying that, Mr. DePompei, I'd love to hear it. We're going to try and convince people in a few minutes to stay here a bit longer to hear all four of your articles. And we're not going to do that if we take too long. Selectmen have a position on Article 40.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. Having received the amendments this evening, the selectmen have voted the following way. O'Brien, no. Jabrinsky, no. Hardy, yes.
Okay. While the FinCom is talking, I'd like to hear from the audience against or in favor. Yes, Mr. Abrams.
Robert Abrams, Horse Pond Road. The article's already working, and we haven't even passed it yet. Sometimes we put things together not because what we want to do is delay the budget every time somebody makes an amendment for a night. What we want to do is we want to send a message to our administrators, don't do to us what you did to us last year. Don't come in with a budget at the last minute that bears absolutely no relationship to the budget that was printed in the warrant. And it already worked. Just the fact that this article is on the warrant for this town meeting, when the budget came to us this year, the budget came to us almost exactly, if not exactly, the way it was printed in the warrant. We had good discussion on our budget. We passed it fairly easily. And that's why this article is a good idea, just so our administrators remember that we, the people at town meeting, who have to make the decisions, need to have the courtesy of not having enormous changes made on town meeting floor without at least giving us an opportunity to talk about it. I think we ought to support this article. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Coe?
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I urge defeat of this article. It reminds me of the arguments for term limits. Oh, we should have term limits. And the truth is we have term limits. They're called elections. And the same thing is true here. If you don't like the budget that's brought in, or you don't like the particular line item that's been increased by some millions of dollars, vote against it. The idea that we should adopt some turgid procedure like this that hamstrings what the town meeting can do, I mean, I'd love to have the town council tell us that the attorney general would never approve it. I suppose that's a forlorn hope. But please don't start down this road of trying to legislate in advance by complicating the town meeting so that only a few people that have an axe to grind understand what's going on.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. Could you stand up, please? Mike's coming to you.
Mike Triano, Lincoln Road. I think this is, it's just the opposite, sir. This is about preventing a few people from ramrodding changes down our throat. I mean, we are the citizen legislators of the town, and this seems to me a reasonable safeguard to ensure that we have the tools we need to make good decisions on behalf of the town. This is, if anything, it seems a very common sense and now deliberately worded model. It's about presenting an option to the people who are at the meeting that if they just want some additional time to reflect on a significant budget change, that there is a mechanism in town meeting by which we can secure that right. It seems reasonable and balanced and is in the spirit of empowering us as legislators, and I support it wholeheartedly.
This gentleman right there.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I don't recall anyone in the 20 years that I've been coming here trying to ramrod anything down our throats. I think often there are changes to the budget because of numbers that have come in from the state or other projects kind of at the last minute that require adjustments. I don't see changing the process. I agree with the comments that Mr. Coe said. It's just going to make for a very convoluted process. So I urge defeat of this.
I was just pointing to Mr. O'Brien. As soon as he finishes, I'll get you a call to question quickly, Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Ms. Moderator. Just for the benefit of the hall, last year there were some significant changes made to the budget. It was the changes came about just as we started town meeting, and they were very specifically caused by the fact that the town had made the decision to move to the GIC health insurance program. The timelines that were prescribed and allowed by the statute literally meant that town employees were making decisions on health insurance and premium levels and expenditures, so that literally that day the assistant town manager was calculating the savings, and then there were detailed explanations that were given as to what the savings were in total, how the savings would be distributed across the budget, and of course it was debated and voted by this body. It is not a situation that occurs that often. I don't see us leaving the GIC anytime soon, and it was essentially a one-time type situation. So keep that in mind as you consider what's being asked here.
I'm going to have to take the call to question. I just report that the Finance Committee is unable to reach a decision, so we won't have a position. There was a call to question that I held off on because I had already pointed to Mr. O'Brien. Does that receive a second? It does. All those in favor of the call to question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by more than two-thirds. This is a majority vote. All those in favor, can we put the motion back up? All those in favor of the motion as appears on the screen signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, oh, it's defeated handily. We're going to move on to Article 41. Mr. DePompei, please.
Yeah, Mr. Moderator, I move in accordance with the amended article as shown on the view grab.
Okay, I'll let that go. Can you show it on the view graph, and does that receive a second? It does. Why don't you give us a little explanation of the difference between this and what's in the warrant? It's not much, is it?
No, in this article, I believe the only difference was I changed the word biannual to annual.
Okay, so he changed biannual to annual. That's the only change.
I gave town management a little bit of flexibility.
Okay. Your presentation, sir.
Thank you. Can you get the next slide? Next slide. There we go. Basically, you can follow this pretty much in the warrant. The town forum gives all town residents the opportunity to openly discuss, understand, and cooperatively address the status of current issues, opportunities, and unanticipated challenges in managing town affairs. It will facilitate communications in town governance and enable transparency in the management of town affairs. It is an enabler for increased participation in town governance. It provides a planned, scheduled opportunity other than town meeting to discuss the management of town affairs. Article 39 in town meeting 2011 was a resolution to create this town forum, and the resolution passed with a majority vote. The town interpreted the resolution as their opportunity to report what they do and resident participation and where resident participation could be encouraged. The 2011 town meeting resolution has not been acted and has not provided the open, interactive, real-time exchange of information and ideas originally envisioned and voted by the residents. This year, I've written this as an actual warrant article, so it becomes law as opposed to simply a request. Thank you.
Okay. The Finance Committee doesn't have any opinion on this bylaw. The Selectmen?
The Selectmen unanimously support the revised version.
Great. Anybody care to be heard on the article as appears on the view graph? Yes, sir. Can we get a mic here?
I fully support this article. I think that any time it gives our town a chance to sit down without Robert's rules and to toss around the issues that we all confront in a way that's safe and collaborative, I don't think it can hurt our town at all. The free flow of ideas, I think, is very important. And what we've seen over the last few years has perhaps been a rising in the level of debate about the way things have done in this town. And you're not going to solve those kind of more existential questions by running through a Robert's Rules ordered process like town meeting. That's where you're going to have to sit down. You're going to be able to say things, toss around ideas, spitball, if you will, and be able to try to form consensus so that we can start voting a majority over most of the issues that we confront. That way we're going to move forward as a high-performing town again. And I think this is a great way to do it. And if you haven't seen what they've done in Lincoln, and Lincoln's a high-performing town, if you've watched what they've done with their growth and the way they manage their money, it's a very good lesson for folks in Sudbury. And they get together with this. They put up stickies with different ideas. It's kind of like a brainstorming idea, a brainstorming session that you'd have in business. It's very, very effective.
Okay. Anybody else who wishes to be heard on this article? I see none. This is a majority vote. All those in favor of the motion on the view graph signify by raising their cards. Those opposed, it passes nearly unanimously. Because we should do this, before we move on to Article 42, could someone please make a motion to continue the town meeting beyond 10:30? Is there a second? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes. Thank you so much. A couple of very, very quick announcements. Mary McCormick has been the executive assistant to the town manager, working at Town Hall for over 16 years. This is her last town meeting. She organizes this town meeting. Thank you, Mary. town clerk asked me to announce that any official who was just elected a month ago, but not sworn in, they can come forward and see the town clerk as soon as we finish. If you're unable to do that, you can go see the town clerk in her office Monday through Friday. Before taking up the last two articles, I'd like to thank all who have helped with town meeting, the many, many people, including Mary. Particularly, I'd like to thank each of you for performing your duty as legislators. Thank you very much. Mr. DePompei, a motion under 42.
I move in the words of the amended article as shown on the view graph.
Okay. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. DePompei. Can you put that back up?
I don't have control of that, but technology is here trying.
Mark, is that the motion that he's just made? Great. Can you bring it so we can read it? Mr. DePompei, while he's doing that, you can go right ahead.
Move to amend Town Bylaws Article 3, Town Affairs, by adding the following section. Section 10. All boards and standing committees shall annually elect by majority vote a chairperson. The chairperson shall prepare the agenda for all items to be addressed by the board/committee and will be responsible for ensuring both the majority and the minority opinions of the board or committee are communicated to the public. For the Board of Selectmen, no member shall serve as chair more than once in any consecutive 3 years. All other boards and committees shall endeavor to rotate the chairmanship when possible.
Does that receive a second? Yes, it does. Mr. DePompei.
I originally tried to write this article a little bit broader because we have some committees where the chairmanship simply doesn't seem to rotate. I got a lot of pushback on those committees saying nobody else wanted it. Or in some cases, they felt it took so long to train somebody to be able to be chairman that they didn't want to let go of them once they were there. So when I simplified the article down, the one committee that was left where I felt it was possible to rotate it or put something in about rotating the chairmanship was the Board of Selectmen. And that's the way I wrote it. The reason it's a little complicated with the no more than once in any consecutive 3 years was we did go from three to five. It was originally written with three. I'm one of the people in town that felt three was just the wrong dynamics. It was too easy with three people to form a coalition of two against one. It's like having three children in your household. So when we expanded to five, it helps. But there still are cases where you could have three. So I wrote in kind of the fail-safe that said no more than once in any three-year period. Thank you.
So the big change was from the warrant to this motion is that it only applies to the selectmen.
It really only applies to the Board of Selectmen. Plus, it encourages. I mean, right now, we need to encourage these other committees to train the members so they can all fleet in to the chairmanship position. We have a lot of committees right now where people are just not even thinking about that, and we have the same. And some of these committees handle a lot of money. I think we would all be well served, especially on the money committees. And I'm not speaking specifically about financial, but such as community preservation. There's a lot of money on that committee, and I think it would serve us all better if we rotated the men and women on the committees through those chairmanship positions. Thank you.
So Finance Committee has no position. Selectman?
Selectman O'Brien, no. Dravinsky, no. Hardy, yes.
Okay. Anybody in the hall would like to be heard on this motion? Yes, sir, in the middle.
Yes, Mark Kablak, 46 Poplar Street. I urge the hall to vote against this motion. I think this is a good example of what town meeting should not try to do, in the same way that we shouldn't be designing intersections at the intersection of Route 27 and Concord Road on town meeting floor. I don't think we should be trying to micromanage the procedural mechanisms of any board or committee in this town. I think Mr. DePompei probably has good intentions here. But I think the focus of this is too constraining. It's overpowering. a local board, a local commission throughout the state, throughout 351 communities and towns, governs itself in terms of what meetings it sets, what agenda articles it hears, how long it constitutes a meeting on any given night based on its own procedural reckoning. And I would urge this town meeting not to overreach, and I would urge this town meeting to vote no on this motion.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir.
Leonard Simon, Meadowbrook Circle. I be very brief. I believe that if the residents of the town have the wisdom to select their leaders, then they should have the confidence in those leaders to determine who should be their chairman. And reaching into that room to tell them who can serve, when they can serve, how long they can serve, whatever else they should do, is short-sighted and ill-advised.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this motion before we vote? Yes, sir. The mic right behind you, Frank.
My name is Frank Lyons, 157 Wayside Inn Road. The concern I have with this is not so much about selectmen, but there are other committees, if you will, that would have a difficult time moving chairmanships around a lot. Like I'm a member of the Ponds and Waterways Committee, and I know there are a lot of people on that committee who would not want to chair. I can think of the Conservation Commission as being another committee.
Frank, I'm sorry for interrupting. That was in the warrant, but the motion is limited from that and really essentially just applies mandatorily to the selectmen, not these other boards.
It's just the selectmen?
Yes. It encouraged other boards to do it, but it's only mandatory for the selectmen. Thank you. Anybody else care to be heard? Yes, sir.
Bob Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I'm even opposed to encouraging the rotation of the chairmanship around. I think that too many boards do that just by automatic process. You know, if you're the one that's about to be reelected, then you get to be chairman, and it rotates around for no good reason. That doesn't mean that it shouldn't be rotated around when there's some reason why it should, but the idea that rotating it around is a good thing in its own right, I don't think stands up to common sense.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this before we vote on it? I see no one. This is a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passed. It's defeated overwhelmingly. We're now going to move on to Article 43. Mr. DePompei, please.
Article 43. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I move in the words of the amended article as shown on the view screen.
Technically, okay. Just move in the words as shown on the screen.
Move in the words as shown on the screen.
Great. Thank you. Is there a second? It is. Mr. DePompei, please.
This is Section 5 of the financial article. The town manager shall annually submit to the Finance Committee, not later than January 31st, an estimate of requirements for the ensuing year, and the selectmen shall report all other requests for appropriations on or before February 5th. By the way, let me state that basically the first and second paragraph are already existing
Dan, you're just making the motion now?
Just making the motion.
Yeah, no commentary. We just got to make the motion. But could you start off? Would you agree if I said move to amend the bylaws, Article 4, Finance, Section 5, some Finance Committee, Section 5, by substituting the following language? You just read Section 5. Can you read the middle paragraph now?
All right. Additionally, all submittals reports shall include, at a minimum, 1, the prior year actual expenditures, 2, current fiscal year appropriated, and 3, any amounts currently held in reserve accounts, contingency accounts, escrow accounts, and self-insurance accounts. Said submittals and reports shall also include all unfunded liabilities. The Finance Committee shall, not later than March 31st, submit to the selectmen their written report with their recommendations, including the amounts requested by those originating the above estimates. The selectmen shall cause the Finance Committee's budget submittal, including items 1 through 3 above, ensuing year requested amounts, recommendations, and the Finance Committee's report of reasons for differences to be printed in the warrant for the annual town meeting.
I apologize, Dan. You were about to say that what's different from in this motion than what's in the warrant.
Right. Can you go to that slide? Basically, it's just a reorganization of the words. Where it says Section 5 on the slide, that first paragraph and the last paragraph, okay, are basically right out of the existing Article 5. So what you're looking at, if you just read the first paragraph and the second paragraph, reading the yellow, the highlighted portion with the unhighlighted, that is the article as it currently exists. The changes I made in the first paragraph were because, well, the first paragraph is because it isn't the town departments that submit the information to the Financial Committee, it's the town manager that does that. So it was wrong in the bylaws. The middle paragraph is added. And the reason I added it is because those of you that have been coming to town meeting will probably agree that the financial report has improved over the last several years, primarily due to the work of the Finance Committee. However, there's nothing that defines, it can change at any time. There's nothing in the bylaw that defines what information will be submitted. So all I did in the middle was define the information that they currently submit, which is what you would normally anticipate. The actuals for the prior year, the appropriated for the current year, and the budget estimate for the next year. Really, the only thing that's been added is all of those other numbers. Like you may remember when we started town meeting, there was $2 million worth of free cash. What I'm saying is where we have these other numbers, we also account for free cash, contingency reserves, medical reserves, unfunded obligations. So the taxpayer, so you, have a broad, full knowledge of really what the balance sheet looks like as well as the budget for next year. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. Finance Committee have a position?
This is the first time the Finance Committee is seeing this version of this, so we have not had time to consider it, but we did not approve the original version, and we take no position on this current version.
Okay. Selectman?
Having just seen the revised version at 7:30 this evening, we've taken the position of O'Brien no, Drabinsky no, and Hardy yes. It should be pointed out that all of this information that's available is available on the town website through the audited reports already. And in addition to that, there is some concerning question as to how this, as currently written, would apply to LS and SPS since they develop their own budgets and submit them to the Finance Committee. So you could theoretically be gaining all of this information from the town only and essentially have blank pages or no comparable reports from the other sections. And, of course, would you want it from Minuteman so that if your objective in total is to get a full comprehensive financial picture of the town, you would have every entity that has anything to do with expenditures included. And this may potentially fall short of that.
Mr. DePompei?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to that by saying, once again, the first paragraph and the second paragraph is Section 5 of the financial article in the bylaws as it currently exists. So everything that Mr. O'Brien just said is a weakness in that current bylaw.
Well, okay. You all set, Mr. DePompei?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on the article? Oh, the Finance Committee does have a position, maybe.
The Finance Committee understands the intentions of Mr. DePompei, and we certainly are willing to work with him and any citizen to improve the reporting that we do both within the warrant as well as outside of the warrant. Our concerns were that this is probably not the right mechanism in order to do it. The Finance Committee does hold a public a public comment section at every single one of our meetings and welcome anyone to come and have the conversation about what should or shouldn't be in the warrant. Some of the challenges we have with this, I don't think that Mr. DePompei has thought through all the unintended consequences, such as unfunded liabilities. I think that primarily refers to the OPEB liability. That is something that is not done every year. It's done every other year, every third year. It's a very every other year. It's a very involved process that we bring in an actuary to do it. So he may unintentionally be adding additional cost to the town in order to do that every year. But in addition, the intention of the Finance Committee with the warrant is to provide the right amount of information for the entire town, both those who come to town meeting as well as those who aren't able to make it. All of the information that he's requesting is available on the website. If you're not able to find it, we're certainly open to ideas on how to make it more accessible. But we also want to make sure that the warrant does not become a, you know, 1,000-page document that includes all the annual reports of the town and all the other documents that would be required. The intention is to give the financial picture. We certainly feel that it does. To the extent that anyone feels that there's any shortcomings, we are certainly open to discussing it.
Mr. DePompei.
Once again, okay, I have, there's no difficulty with what the Financial Committee currently does, with the exception of, I think it would be appropriate for the taxpayers when they come to vote to know about such things as free cash, contingency reserves, medical reserves, et cetera, but money that doesn't show on the budget. I think it's significant. I think what we did at the first article of town meeting tonight kind of proved that, because we had $2 million that we immediately put away, and we couldn't use that for town center once we put it away. It would be nice to know about that, know about it well in advance, give some thought to that process. You know, the only things I've added to what FinCom currently does, as they said, is data that they already have. I'm just asking that it be put in a convenient location where you can read it.
Anybody? Yes, Mr. Hardy. Well,
yes, thank you. It seems pretty easy. All this information is on the town website. Why not just put it in the warrant? It's what people bring to town meeting to vote with. People don't bring the town website with them to town meeting to vote. You can't even get Wi-Fi in here. So I think it's pretty easy. If all this information is readily available and on the town website, it's not thousands of pages. It's just three or four numbers. It would be literally three or four rows in a table. Printed on one page of the warrant is really all he's asking for. And if it's already readily available on the town website, why not print it in the town warrant? It seems pretty easy.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Yes, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. Now what was I going to say?
Could you hold it a little closer?
Sure. Is that better?
Yes.
Maybe I'm missing it, but I didn't see anything in this warrant article that said this has to go in the warrant, and the discussion seems to be about putting it in the warrant. All I saw was it town manager should submit to the Finance Committee this report. So I don't see where that's coming from. And what I'm hearing is that this can be done. So why does it require change to the bylaws?
There is a just reading it through as you were speaking, and there is a section, if you want to put the
okay,
next
well,
two
maybe,
paragraphs.
Maybe I missed it. I apologize. But, why does it require a change? Why does it require a change to the bylaw? I don't get it. If it's easy to do and they're willing to do it, just do it.
Okay. Yes, right here.
Kirsten Opinion, Harness Lane. I have a question. Did the selectmen just say that they learned about these changes early tonight? Is that correct? Okay.
Hang on.
Don Budinski, you want to
get an answer?
Yeah, I'd like to answer that. I've been going back.
Well, I'm asking them, actually.
Dan, hang on one second. The question was of the selectmen, Mr. O'Brien.
The final amended, a Xerox copy of the final amended version was provided to the board this evening at 7:30 when we arrived on stage here.
Okay. Then a follow-up comment then. We've talked a lot, and I've heard a lot of people in this room talk about vetting things and being able to talk about things and thoroughly discussing things.
We're going to force an old rule that you look at the moderator when you talk.
Anyways, discussing things, sorry. And I feel like with Mr. DePompei and some of the other articles that you've written and talked about, as I said, vetting things and having thorough discussions, I think that there's a lot of confusion here with this article. I think the Finance Committee was sort of taken off guard, and I think the Board of Selectmen, I would have probably taken no position on this because I feel like we're sort of manipulating words, and I don't know that I don't quite understand what the end game is. I don't necessarily think that standing on town meeting floor at 11 o'clock at night with a small group of people really gives us the opportunity to really discuss this, and I think it's just come on very quickly, and I wouldn't support this.
Just quickly.
Hang on. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Ben.
Just quickly, Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I'd like to ask two questions and maybe a statement after that. I'd like to ask Mr. DePompei when he submitted the changes.
Basically, this article has been almost
it's been evolving
since the 31st.
Okay.
In terms of vetting, I have met with FinCom on these articles on two or three separate occasions, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And I met with the Board of Selectmen when we went through the articles in the forum that I established or tried to establish 3 years ago. And finally, we as a town talked them into having a forum on the town articles, and I presented this article then. And from that day, I don't think there are any changes to this article other than one change that came from the moderator, which was really in the way I made the motion, but had nothing to do with the body of the changes. Once again, the changes that are in here is I'm simply asking for some additional information. 90% of the information that's in there in that middle paragraph, Financial Committee already does, but they do it without it having any definition. Do I think our bylaws are weak? I do think our bylaws are weak. I think there's a lot of there's an unlimited amount of discretionary authority in the bylaws that I personally believe should be defined a little better. However, it was vetted.
Just a quick comment on this. I see this body that we bring together every year is kind of analogous to a corporation, a nonprofit, a university, in the sense that, you know, you have the CEO's office, you've got the CFO's office, and perhaps I think best way to describe us is the board of directors or board of trustees. And what board of trustees wouldn't want to see a proper balance sheet? You can see a budget, and a budget will tell you only so much. But a proper balance sheet is going to give you the full picture, full financial picture. And I think that's what Mr. DePompei is trying to get at. When you see large sums of free cash, when you see large sums of reserves, et cetera, those are things that you're not going to see in a budget, but are going to be significant indicators of the financial health and where the direction of the finances are going in the town. So a budget is an incomplete document to judge the financial health of any organization.
The question has been called. Is there a second? There is. All those in favor of the call of questions signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. This is a majority vote. All those in favor of the motion as it appeared in the view graph signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. I'm going to do a little head count, so why don't you put your cards down. We'll ask for those in favor to raise your cards and hold them up, please. Don't put them down. Thank you.
Thank you. All those opposed? It's actually not as close as I thought. It's overwhelmingly defeated. Do I have a motion to dissolve the town meeting? Is a second. All those in favor signify by raising your card. Those opposed. Thank you all very, very much. Dan de Pompeii.